Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Emerging Eve, where we will focus on unraveling the difficulties in the midst of our journey and move toward forward progress. This program is not meant to replace any form of therapy, and you are encouraged to seek out a mental health professional if necessary.
Hello, and welcome to Emerging Eve. I'm your host, Keisha, and you are tuned into the Bachelor News Radio Network. Please feel free to call 646-949-0130 if you have any questions, or you can send your questions to the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LA Bachelor. Come on in and let's talk today about personal acceptance. Many of you may wonder, what the heck is personal acceptance? That's an awesome question, and we're going to get into that. Oh, also, if you have any questions throughout the week or any topics that you want to have discussed, please feel free to email those to emergingeve, all one word, at gmail.com. Also, look for and join Emerging Eve group that's on Facebook. Let's see. Okay, so today we're talking about personal acceptance, and I want to give you a definition to get a really good understanding of what personal acceptance is. So what it is understanding and recognizing your own abilities as well as your own limitations in every moment. Matter of fact, I want to kind of emphasize the word moment. And to recognize that you have abilities that are natural, you have strengths that you've grown, you have things you need to improve, but it does not mean that it is a thing that is anything that's impossible, okay? So with personal acceptance, it's accepting where you are in that moment without judging yourself. Let's see. All right, so the first part that I want to look at is what all do we need to do to start with personal acceptance? Oh, I'm sorry. I got the phone number wrong for some reason. The phone number is 646-929-0130. I must have been thinking of something else. I apologize about that and any confusion. Also, you can listen now at thebachelornews.airtime.pro. Thank you very much. So the first thing is to set an intention. Now, with personal acceptance, to set an intention, that means what's your aim, what's your focus, what's your goal for self in that moment. Because remember, I think a few weeks back, I made the statement that you can be perfectly where you are in that time, but the very next moment, you should be striving for something else, something more, that's basically going to be a buildup on where you're already at. So everything you do is a stepping stone for yourself to move forward. With the intention is acknowledging where you want to see yourself, not necessarily 1 year down the road, not necessarily 6 months down the road, but very much where you are now, what's your next step? If it's concerning your job, wherever you're at now, let's say you're at entry level, what's your next step? Are you looking to go into manager? Are you looking to be able to maintain this until you're able to branch out and open your own, whatever you're looking for? You have to be very mindful that with your next step, it needs to be that thing, that very next step, not the next hill or the next mountain, but the very next step. Because what that does is it takes the pressure off of you. It helps you limit the anxiety that you may experience when you feel like, dang, I'm not making it up the side of this mountain to get to my big, huge goal. But you have steps as you work toward that goal. So by looking at the steps versus the mountain, you're able to take a lot of stress off of yourself and out of your interaction. And it limits the way you look at yourself, as sometimes people can be very, very hard on themselves and think, well, hey, I wasn't successful in this step the way I wanted to be successful in this step. So therefore, you know, I'm a failure. I'm unsuccessful. I'm unable to do certain things. The very next portion in self-acceptance is celebrate your strengths. This is the part where it reminds me of the Olita Adams song, sometimes you have to encourage yourself as part of the course. I can't remember the name of the song right off the bat, but sometimes you have to encourage yourself. You have to say, I did really good at this, or I did excellent at that, or, you know, I completed this task or this goal. You have to be able to look at your strengths. What do you do well? What comes easy to you? What things do you feel that are that you're able to brag about to yourself? And we have to learn how to brag to ourselves, because that's what overcomes those negative self-talk, is being able to say to myself, you know, I'm intelligent, I'm strong, I'm creative, I'm powerful, I'm successful, and I have all these things to back up what I'm saying. So I'm proving to myself, I'm giving myself facts to support that I do have strength. And with those strengths, I can continue to move forward. It's very important for us as people to look at what our strengths are, because so often when things don't go our way, we take on this really heavy weight. And in taking on this heavy weight, we look at ourselves in a very negative light. And that very negative light can be very defeating and detrimental to our progress, because, for one, you're wasting energy on talking yourself down, so talking down to yourself. Another thing is, when you get stuck in that muck of negative self-talk, it's very hard to pull yourself out. It's not impossible. It's just, it adds another difficulty, and it adds another obstacle to overcome to then get to whatever your next step is as you work toward that ultimate goal. So identify your strengths. Celebrate yourself. Sometimes what I encourage clients to do is send yourself one of those scheduled messages just to, for the next day, especially if you know something difficult is coming, just to identify what you successfully did in the past few days or the past week. So then when that message comes in while you're going through that possible difficulty, you're able to see in your own words, in your own phone, yeah, I remember when I successfully did this. I remember when I did that. And it gets you, it's kind of like being your own hype person. Because if you're not hyping yourself, sometimes there's absolutely nobody else to do it. And it's very important that we do those things for ourselves. Be your hype person. Be the person that's able to say, because I did this, I know I can do that. The next step, and we've kind of touched on this a few times, is considering the people around you. Now, for a hot second, I'm going to just tell you, I'm going to get on my soapbox. Everyone, please be mindful of the interactions you're having and the interactions you're maintaining with people. Some interactions are so negative and so draining and so hurtful, but many times we as people hold on to them because that's all we know in that time. That's how we feel we have access. That is telling yourself a total tale. Let those people go. Let those people out of your life. If they're not trying to go or they're going slowly, then you cut yourself off from them because they are not offering anything positive, healthy, or nurturing to you or to your life. Be mindful that in cutting off those interactions, it does not mean that you will no longer be able to have any interaction with that person, but be mindful until that person gets to a healthy, happy place in their life, they're not going to be able to support your healthy, happy place. And I say that because not only in national news, but in local news, there have been so many atrocities of people being harmed and killed because of negative people that they were fearful or concerned about letting go. Another thing, as we consider the people around us, there is absolutely no way you can offer happiness to anyone else. If you are not happy, you cannot support someone else's happiness. You cannot create happiness and give it to someone. They have to decide on that themselves. Also, in attempting to share your happiness, they will suck all of your joy out of your situations and then leave you with nothing but emptiness. Please, 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 if you are interacting with people like that, please be mindful to, you know, create positive space between you guys. That means you can exit the situation in a positive way and focus on yourself. It's too many options for you in life to be able to express joy and identify other people that have joy to share with you, and that will reinforce your joy and your own happiness. So the people that that you're around, if they speak negatively to you, this is another thing. Then how are they speaking life? Because your happiness, your intention, your acceptance comes from hope and possibility. So if a person is speaking negativity all the time in your life, that's not supporting hope, joy, possibilities, positive intention, or acceptance. So the thing is, what's the purpose of them? Now, with many people, they'll say, well, what if it's a family member? Even with a family member, you can create a positive space and set those boundaries. I think we talked about that about 2 weeks ago, setting appropriate boundaries with people, saying, I cannot accept this into my life, so therefore, until you change, because they're the ones bringing the negativity, until they change, they can't come into a certain proximity of you. Not saying that you have to cut that family member completely off. Sometimes you may have to. But it is very important for you to set those healthy boundaries for yourself to maintain your personal acceptance, to maintain your peace, to maintain your happiness and your joy. When a person speaks negativity out into the atmosphere, let's just give that kind of picture, you have the choice to either reject it or you have the choice to accept it. Whether you reject it or accept it, it takes action. Now, if you're not very strong with your action of rejecting it because, well, you know, I don't want to tell that person that hurtful, or I don't want to tell that person I cannot accept that that perspective, whatever. If you feel like, well, if I say something to this person, it's going to be hurtful to them, then you have to think, what I'm doing right now is I'm accepting it in some kind of way. Now, you may not wholeheartedly say, yes, exactly what you said is true and I'm going to take it in, but you are saying, since I won't speak against it, then I must be accepting it in some kind of way. And it's going to sit over in the corner until something happens, and then the minute that a situation comes up and it's not successful the way you would like it to be, then you think back, well, so-and-so said, you know, this to me, or they said that to me, so therefore what they did tell me a year ago or when I was a little kid or 10 years ago, then it is true. They just saw it before I did. That is absolutely not the truth. So be mindful, either you have the action of rejecting it or you have the action of receiving it and accepting it. In the rejection, it doesn't have to be rude or disheartening or anything hurtful to that person. Just tell that person, I don't accept that. Because when you speak it out of your mouth, it puts it into their ears. They're thinking that, well, dang, they're not accepting this negativity I'm putting out there. But it also puts it in a whole new realism for you. Because when we say things, it has a whole nother reality. So being mindful to say those things, I don't accept that. And then that's where you start that boundary at. Also, what are you willing to do to be able to avoid, you know, accepting negative input from others? And we'll talk more about that next week, is accepting and rejecting things that are healthy to us and then those things that are not healthy to us. Well, I want to give you some info right quick. We have on the Bachelor News Network, there will be I want you to listen in Friday from 5 to 5:30 p.m. for our featured artist of the week. This week will be Patti LaBelle. Listen for 30 minutes of Patti LaBelle at the Bachelor News .airtime.pro. It's the featured album for this Friday, and it's exclusively on Bachelor News Radio Network. All right. Now, let's go into the next portion, which is create a support system. I've touched on this about creating a support system. This is so important. For one, the first word is support. Support, support, support. That means all things that are positive and focused on helping you get to where you're trying to be. So people that will accept you as you are in all of your perfection and all of your imperfection, they will accept you. They're not trying to work to change you. They're not working to try to tear you down or tell you all the negative about yourself. What their purpose is to say, hey, if I'm here, I'm all for you. I'm looking to make sure you have the things that you need. Now, your support system is going to also work because then it gives you the ability to be supportive of them as well. It's very easy to support and encourage someone who's also supporting and encouraging you. Because not only are they pouring into you, but now you have something to offer them and pour into them. You learn something, you go and share it with them. They learn something, they come and share it with you. And you both are on a positive growth. Now, a positive support system doesn't have to be 100 people. It has to be, though, people that you can trust, people that are positive, people that are going to be honest with you. That is one of the main things, people that will be honest with you and tell you, hey, this is not something that you need to be focused on right now. This is not something that, you know, that looks like it's, you know, that like it's working for you. You dated this person possibly before. It ended up really horrible and hurtful to you. Really reconsider and look at that. They'll talk to you from a place of fact, not from a place of feeling or assumption. And with those places of fact, it's very important to look at the facts of, am I doing something that's the same thing that was hurtful to me before? And if so, why? By allowing myself to reenter a situation that was hurtful to me before, it's not helpful to me right now at all. Another key to self-acceptance is forgive yourself. Many times we as people have made choices and we feel very guilty or even shame behind the choices we've made. And we hold it over our heads and hold it over our heads and hold it over our heads. Now, whether it's something you've done to someone else or to yourself, you have to be able to forgive yourself. Many people say, well, you know, how in the heck do I forgive myself for something that I've done? I haven't even talked to the person and asked them to forgive me. If that is something that you feel needs to be done in your journey, go to that person and you know, express your want to resolve any contention. I encourage people, don't say, hey, I want you to forgive me because I blew your car back in 1992. Don't do that. If that person chooses to forgive you, that's 100% their choice. Even if they choose not to forgive you, you still have the choice to forgive yourself and say, hey, I'm a new person. I make different types of choices. That action was hurtful. Either I knowingly did it and it was hurtful, or I did not realize the hurt that it was going to cause. The fact is, it's done. There's nothing I can do to take that action back, to take those words back even. But I forgive myself because my whole focus is not to maintain that type of interaction with other people. We all make choices that we regret at times, and we have to grow past those. We have to accept that, you know, I've learned from that choice. Because some of our choices are not mistakes, they're choices. And I choose not to return to that and to let that just be. Don't hold it over yourself. Don't hold yourself down because of that. many of us also may face being the worst critic possible to ourselves. When you are your biggest critic, just think of it like this. You are with yourself 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from birth to death. If you are always talking down to yourself or rendering a harsh judgment on yourself or any type of negativity, you can't get away from that person because it's you. So at that point, you need to make a decision within you that I believe that I am successful. I believe that I can accomplish what my goals are, what my intentions are, what my positive interactions will be with other people. I believe I can accomplish whatever goals I set for myself. Now, with that, also add on to that, I'm human. Sometimes I make positive choices. Sometimes my choices don't work out so well. Sometimes I even make a mistake. But what I am doing is I'm doing the best that I can do, and that's the best I can do at any point in time. With reminding yourself of that, it quiets that criticism, that judgment that we put on ourselves. That kind of goes back to the one I just talked about, is that forgiving yourself. You are the only one that can make the choice to move forward from things that are difficult for you. And in those, in looking back over your life, look at the things that you felt were not successes. I don't like to use the word failures because that seems so constant, so focused on, well, if I failed once, I'll fail all the time. But those things that weren't successful in the time, what did you learn from it? Because in everything we go through, positive or negative, we learn something about it. In learning, then you use that as you progress to your next step. The next one to kind of touch on is grief. Grief about the loss of an unrealized dream. This one you have to be kind of cautious about, because if you say, well, my unrealized dream is to finish my bachelor's and I'm 60 years old and there's no way I can go back to school, why can't you? The thing is, with this one, to give a clarification, those unrealized dreams of the past, don't hold those over yourself as, well, since I didn't do it then, I can never do them. Just because it didn't happen then doesn't mean that it can't happen now. As long as you're on this side of the dirt, as I often tell my clients, you're on this side of the dirt and you're still breathing, you have a chance and an opportunity to realize whatever dreams you have for yourself. If it's, oh, well, you know, I want to run a marathon, get out there and start doing the things that you need to do to prepare for one. First, identify when you want to go and run in. Don't put one for next week and you've never ran past the block, because that's going to be hurtful to your body physically and your thought process. But put one out to where you give yourself time to train for it, time to get prepared for it, time to do those step-by-step things that you need to do to be successful at the goal that you have. If it's to get in or change your career, do it. If nothing else, have we learned from COVID? COVID has taught us, if it's something you were trying to do, this is the time to do it. If you want to go back to school, do it. If you want to change your career, do it. If you want to begin to do yoga, begin to go jogging every day, do it. There's absolutely nothing but yourself standing in your way at this point. So those unrealized dreams of the past, just because they're in the past, say, hey, I couldn't do it then. I grieve the fact that I wish I would have, and that means I've gotten to a place of acceptance. And in that acceptance, move forward. Okay, so I have a question from Stacy. Stacy is asking, in learning to be assertive and having a support system, is learning to be assertive and having a support network to you part of positive self-esteem and personal acceptance? Self-esteem, not necessarily, but a positive support system can reinforce a positive self-esteem. That positive self-esteem comes from your personal beliefs about you. Now, in that, earlier when I was discussing, we have to decide what we're going to reject and what we are going to accept. A positive support system are going to give us more things that we can accept about ourselves, okay? So they're going to tell you, oh, I see this as a strength. I see this as a positive. I see this as, you know, help for your next step that you're on. So they're going to be like your cheerleaders, the ones rooting for you. Even someone that's going to educate you. Hey, I see this or I know this. Let me help you understand this or let me show you this. Personal acceptance, that helps you directly because this is an internal thing. You're internally accepting yourself, so therefore your self-esteem is going to go up. It's very important to have personal acceptance. Sometimes one thing that's like very upfront that maybe we see more in today's society is that people will not accept themselves for who they are as far as their sexual preference. So therefore, they do all they can to hide it and hide it and hide it because of possible assumptions of how my family's going to receive me, what is my work going to say, what are my friends going to say, you know, how I don't want to be rejected by everyone. So therefore, they hide what they feel is their truth about their sexual preference. And all the while, it's hurting them. It's not hurting the people on the outside. It's hurting them directly on the inside. So, yes, your self-esteem can be reinforced by your support system. Your personal acceptance is working right alongside your self-esteem. All right. One more I wanted to touch on before we end is thinking about where do you see your highest level of self? Now, this is something that many of us don't think about often, and that's okay because, you know, that's a difficult question. Many people think, well, what's my highest self? Where do you see yourself? Like, if you reached your ultimate goal, where do you see yourself? So then imagine you of now having a conversation with you, the way you see yourself at the highest level you could actually reach. What would you of now say to your highest self? What would your highest self, version of self, say to you? I would imagine, at least from my perspective, from my highest self, it would be encouragement, like keep pushing. Don't be discouraged. Look to the things that you want and push toward them because anything's attainable. All right. Well, I want to thank you all for tuning in today. I hope that today's discussion has been and will continue to be helpful in your life's journey. You have been listening to Emerging Eve with Keisha on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you for taking such a time as this to participate in your personal improvement with Emerging Eve. I'm Keisha, your host. Remember that in everything, there's an opportunity to learn and grow. If you are experiencing a difficult time, please reach out to the National Crisis Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. And I look forward to hearing from you next week on Emerging Eve with Keisha.
Greetings and great day, everyone. I am Elder Janelle Strickland, host of the Life Cafe radio broadcast from Maximizing Life Family Worship Center. I invite you to tune in every Saturday from 5 to 6 p.m. Tune in, maximize your life with the Word of God, and be blessed. Only on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
So many things. Welcome to another edition of the Bachelor News Radio Show on the Bachelor News Radio Network, WCOM, in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We thank them for broadcasting this, WCLM in Richmond, Virginia, IBM TV, and you can watch the show on Big My Entertainment on Amazon, Roku, and Fire Stick. I'm L.A. Bachelor. We thank you for joining us, as always, on the broadcast. I want to go straight to my guest. He is a licensed therapist and, of course, host of A Dose of the Dime with Yanni. It airs every Friday morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. That's Connecticut time, here on the Bachelor News Radio Network. And I want to bring in Yanni. Hey, Yanni, I appreciate you coming on, as always.
What's up? Hola, mommies and poppies. It's Yanni, your DJ and Dance Ducky with Mr. L.A. Bachelor. Let's get
it. You sound like you're in a spaceship somewhere, so we're gonna work with that. I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to talk about, I'm sure you heard and read about the Simone Biles story where she decided that in the best interest of her, right, herself, and her mental state, that she withdrew from some of the competition at the Olympics in Tokyo, which also is a selfless move in regards to being a good teammate. I'm in the air flipping, and I'm forgetting where I'm at. This is not only not going to help me and injure me, but it's also going to help, I mean, going to hurt the team. So I wanted to get your thought first about that, how she handled it, the negative feedback she got, but she did get a lot of love as well in this era that we call social media.
Okay, so first and foremost, let's get to the bit of this. Unfortunately, what I tell my kids is, I do recognize the place on that, but I tell my kids and I tell my children that we have to be 10 times better than other children. And I'm talking about us melanated children have to be 10 times better than the other children in order for us to get barely any recognition. So when we foul, when we messed up, when we, get in trouble, it's 10 times worse. I mean, we saw the same thing with some issues with Bill. He did not get nearly any of the backlash that some of our athletes have gotten on the Tokyo run. I mean, we're not just talking about the mountain. We're also talking about, I forgot the sister's name, but the runner, she got backlash, a lot of it, wanting her to even drop out of the Olympics. But for what? Why is it that we have to be the best of the best of the best and they can be mediocre and mediocre?
Yeah, I just want to let you know I'm going to mute you for a second because we're getting a lot of feedback and some of what you're saying is muffled. But you're right, if you can adjust that. But you're right that we have to be better. You had to teach your and tell your children had to have that conversation. I had to do the same and continue to do it. And certainly other parents are doing it now, not just because of incidents like this where social media goes crazy, the social media era, but also in the dangers of society. We, as you and I know, the police brutality and the things, women and men of color being killed for just on the base of that is crazy. But, with Simone coming out and saying this, it really speaks to her, not just her courage, and I'm using that word, and a lot of people who are just sports people and like Laura Ingraham said, just dribble the ball, damn it, and don't talk about issues. Those who are always going to have their issues with our athletes in particular should see the courage, not only because of her stepping away because of her illness, but this is a young lady that's strong. Her college coach, her gymnast coach, committed horrible, heinous sexual advancements and acts on her. And still, she worked through that, still working through that. I'm sure you're a therapist. I'm sure she's still working through that. But also performed at a high level, setting that aside, being a team player again in the midst of that. So she could have folded then, Yanni, from that experience. And here she is, she gets through that, she makes it to be arguably, I believe, the greatest gymnast of all time, at least in the United States, and she's going through this. So she doesn't get the credit. How much of that also speaks to the fact that she's a black female as well, that the fact that, had this been a guy, we're patting him on the back and talking about the strength and the courage and his focus to get through it and all these other things. But here it is, Simone Biles, and it's a different story.
Well, okay, so the one thing that I do know about majority of us black women, I never try to speak in generalities. That's a thing that I won't ever do. But the majority of us are resilient, if nothing else. So, yes, Sister Girl went through a lot of trauma, a lot of definitely some very, very difficult times, but she found that love and that space for the things that she wanted to do. Having that trauma does not take from the fact that she's an amazing athlete. Having that trauma does not take from the fact that she loves what it is that she does, and she's good at it. And so that, for me, for instance, and I know this has nothing to do, but I'm going to relate it back. Going through my divorce, I love dance. When I went through my divorce, I was teaching dance at least 4 times a day because I needed to find a space where I could be safe and feel safe, and it was when I danced. So having her come back out and show out, it was, yes, it is phenomenal. It is awesome. But, yeah, I expected nothing less. I expected nothing less because of the fact that she, you know, us as Black women, we are resilient. And when we find our coping skill, we find that thing that we love, we find that thing that makes us glow, we cling to that. And, yeah, unfortunately, I mean, we've heard it all before. It's a lot of people that'll say, you know, that Black women are the most underrated women on the face of the earth, and we're the most underprotected. I saw a post today, and obviously this has nothing to do with the Olympics, but I saw a post today, and it made me think about it. She was asking women of different ethnicities, not women of color. She wanted any other ethnicity of women, white women, Asian women, anything but a Black woman. And she asked, has any man ever asked them what they brought to the table? Has that ever been a discussion? Because she wanted to make a point that for us, it is always us getting asked what it is that we bring to the table. But we don't see that being asked of any other race or any other culture. And the overwhelming response was, no, that question doesn't come up. So why is that always a thing for us? Why do we have to prove and overprove and prove again that we're not just that we're worth, because we're worth it just because we're here, but why that we are good, we are great, we are good. Why do we have to prove that? That's a whole hidden trauma that we probably need to eventually talk about together.
That's a great point and great point of conversation as well. If you're just joining us, we'll talk with Yanni Knox of A Dose of Dine, of course, that airs every Friday morning at 9:30 Eastern on the Bachelor News Radio Network here and WCOM. Yanni, when you look at this taboo, this mentality, is it more, I just thought about it, and when the negative, the naysayers are always going to be there, regardless of any issue or topic or discussion. There's always going to be someone negative and this and that. So I came to expect that when she pulled out, especially again from people who just look at it through the lens of sports. Just go play. I don't care about you having problems. I want to win. I want you to win gold for the United States. But the other part of it is this stigma, society in general, but more specifically the people of color, that we can't have these conversations in our communities, in our households. We can't talk. I'm stressed. I need someone to talk to. It may not mean you're going to go out and shoot up, God forbid, the whole place, but you're fatigued. You got weight on the world and all that stuff. Why is that? Is it more of society just kind of putting this label on people? Are they just bonkers because they're, you know, fatigued mentally? Or is it because it's just going back to a sort of a testosterone thing where, you know, everybody's got to be tough and you can't do this. And what is it, the reason for why, especially when it comes to athletes and people of color specifically?
I feel like a lot of it, and not just athletes, I feel like a lot of this comes from generational trauma. And hear me out when I say this for those of you who don't know what generational trauma is. So our people, most of our people were not born in America. We were brought here via the slave trade, Congo, okay? So with that being said, spankings are also a generational. It was a help for when when we were all in slavery, because no, master, you don't have to whip our children. Look, we're going to whip them for you so that they don't kill them. So I feel like a lot of us were taught to stifle our emotions, to stifle our cries for help, to hold whatever you have going on, and that would be considered your dirty laundry. And as you already know, we don't ever air our dirty laundry. And it's been like a societal thing, a cultural thing that has kind of stayed with us throughout history. And we're not even going to go into how Gen X, you know, I don't know if you are Gen X. I think you might be a boomer, right? Right, LA? But how Gen X is, how Gen X was kind of, we were the original latchkey kids. You know, we didn't get that space to, if something went wrong, we had to figure it out ourselves. We did not dare call our mom, call our dad. And I'm not talking just about culturally this time. At this point, it is a whole generation of X generation people who stifle their feelings and don't talk about the things that are going on because, you know what, we got a job to do, so let's get this job done. We were taught to hold that together because, God forbid, you contacted somebody to help you. It meant that you couldn't do your job. Or for children, it meant that, you know, if it was something that was easy and you couldn't figure it out, you're now going to get in trouble. So we learn how to stifle and figure stuff out on our own. So it is a generation teaching generation teaching generation that, no, you figure this out on your own. You don't tell other people what's going on in your house. It's dirty laundry. You don't air that. And as far as what I call the social media paparazzi, it is literally people sitting on their behinds who don't know much about anything. They hear, well, why does she get to stand what's going on? It's always somebody sitting on their behind, doesn't know anything about the sport, but they hear these stories and they go off because of what happened to them and they made it through. But you don't understand the level of scrutiny that and precision that these athletes have to go through in order to perform at their best at the Olympics, and how much, again, we go back to the stifling of all of that emotion, of all of that, you know, they power through the pain. That is an everyday thing for them. So it's only, what, real that they power through their emotional pain. And it was good that she did what she did. Hopefully she can be an example to other people that you should talk about and step out and be upfront with what it is that's going on with you.
You know, I mean, Barbara in Florida mentioned social media. If more people focused on the positive on social media, some of this would go away. I don't know what this means, what she said. I hope that she'll
She's just making like a comment, like, you know, if people would just focus on the positives of the story as opposed to digging apart the negatives, that society would be a better place. I agree with that. But the problem is that it's too easy to focus on the negative. I always do this exercise when I'm teaching a parenting class, because focusing on negative is so easy. Focusing on positive actually takes time. I ask people to close their eyes and focus on something positive that happened today. And I see a few smiles. It takes a few minutes, and that's good. But then I say, okay, now let's think about something negative that happened today. Almost immediately, there's groans, there's grunts, there's, oh, my God, it's so easy. Because negative is in your face. Negative, everybody can identify with. And so when people feel entitled, like, for instance, well, she didn't go through what I went through. I went through full-fledged rape. Well, okay, it doesn't make her trauma any less than yours, just because what happened to you may have been physically more assertive. Trauma hits people on different levels. Depression hits people on different levels. And when you have people that are holding you accountable for your actions, like your team is counting on you to be 100%, and you're not, what do you do? Isn't it the honorable to bow out? I mean, I'm with that.
Something to be said what Barbara said and what you're pointing out. I mean, on your show and even in our conversations, either via tech or call, hell, I called you last week. You were doing a exercise class or something. I mean, all you it's all positive vibes. And, you know, we don't know how people are in their private times all the time, but you exude the positive, and that's the point she's making as well. So how much of the negative plays a part in the message, you and other therapists, and we're, you know, the topic is athletes. They're trying to tell their story, to bring forth people to get help or talk to someone. How much of the negative and the fake news, that term, because, you know, social media could be our best friend, it could be our worst enemy if you don't do the research. And like you said, positive is easy. Negative is easy to follow. Positive takes some work to believe something positive. So how much of the fake news and some of that negative spin out there sort of blocks what you're trying to do in terms of helping your clients, your patients, and athletes coming out to talk about their stories?
Well, I try to tell my kiddos and my clients to, honestly, I don't look at the news. I do not look at the news. The majority of it I get from social media, and I will click on an article that I want to read if I'm interested in it. And the reason why I don't do that is because the news and a lot of these social media platforms, especially the ones that you can just roll on and it just plays, are designed to feed your fear. They're designed to feed your hatred. They're designed to get you hooked in emotionally. And again, we just talked about it. The easiest way to get you hooked in emotionally is to talk about something negative, something that somebody is scared of. And immediately somebody's hooked in. Oh, what's going on? Fear, hatativity, that breeds. It breeds, and that's how they get you hooked in. And unfortunately, to catch ratings or to, for whatever reason, to get you to click on their website, that's how they do it. Now, for me, I always tell my kiddos and my clients, you want to be careful of those people that openly choose positivity and happiness. Most of us that openly choose to live our life positive and openly choose to live our life in a happy manner have been through hell. And we got there. We got to this positive place by openly choosing to be happy, to choose the positive over the negative. And it does not happen overnight. It is a continuous battle. Because, and I talk about this with my kids, there's a continuum, like a circle. And I feel like everybody wakes up at different points on the circle. So if you're having a positive self-esteem day, you wake up on the far side of the circle, and that's good. But there are going to be days you wake up on the other side of the circle where you're not feeling so hot. It is going to happen. It always happens, and it's unfortunate. And those are the days that you have to openly choose positivity. You have to openly choose to make yourself feel better and openly choose to treat yourself just a little better before you go into anything else. Because when you, those people who have been through hell, like myself, get into that negative spiral, it can be devastating and damaging for everyone around them. So that is why they openly choose positivity in all of these things.
Well, just to follow up with that, you know, Jerry said, you know, the reason why reality TV works is because people want to see, you know, people having issues like they have. And he brought up NASCAR crashes and stuff. And he's actually right. NASCAR, people watch NASCAR a lot, the numbers show, not for the race, but for the crashes. They want to see destruction and negative and stuff, which is crazy. But, I mean, the stats don't lie. But just to follow what you said, I mean, take, for instance, if you're going to be, you mentioned being careful about people who are just taking all the positive, I mean, then how do you decipher between, you know, the good and the bad in those instances? You know, case in point, you may have a pastor that, you know, teaches, you know, revelation. If you know the scriptures, you know, doom and gloom, going to hell, burning in hell, that kind of thing. Or a guy like Joel Osteen that talks about God's love all the time. So, I mean, what do you choose? You choose the person that's going to be like, well, if you don't do this, you're going to get this. Or you choose the other one saying, well, everything's lovely if you just do this. I mean, it as it relates to getting that message out, how do you decipher that?
Ooh, okay. So I always try to tell people to remain within balance. And you kind of misunderstood what I was saying about those of us that choose positivity. When I say we choose positivity, we have the tendency to go off. We could go off, but we choose positivity. I'm talking about those people. Now, there is a trait called toxic positivity, but those people use it in a very different manner, okay? So let's go back to your question. Your question was, how do you, when you're feeding yourself, when you're going into your religious practice or your spiritual practice, what is best for you? And I would always go back to that your spirit knows better than you can ever know. So if it feels right within your spirit, what it is that you're doing, if it feels right within your spirit, what it is that you're hearing, if it brings you joy, if it makes you feel good, then continue doing that. Do not ever go to a space where when you go, and you're supposed to be getting fed when you're doing religious work, if you're going to a space where you feel fearful, or like, I better do this, or I better repent, or you feel fearful, or you feel like, you know, you're not doing the right thing and it doesn't feel good within your spirit and you don't feel like you're in a positive space, that is not a space for you to be in, because what we know for sure is what we feel passionate about, we're bringing more of that to us. So be in a space. Trust your intuition. If you feel good in your space at the moment, and I don't mean copping out and drugs and all, alcohol, all that. I mean, if you genuinely feel good in a space, there's laughter, there's joy, you feel genuinely happy about what's going on, then that is the space that you need to be in, okay? That's what I would say about that.
And thanks for the clarification. We're talking with Yanni Knox, a licensed therapist and host of A Dose of a Dime. We'll allow her at the end to get into her practice and about her show even more. So the beginning of this whole interview and conversation was about athletes coming out like Simone did and others using their voice for good, even if it doesn't look good and feel good even in cases, and knowing they're going to get blowback, a LeBron James or others that may come out in different platforms or different issues, for the sake of the public and the public to learn that it's okay to talk about this and seek, you know, your conversations. With all that being said, how impactful, if any, these powerful athletes that have these millions of followers on Twitter and all these other places, how much of their voice really makes a change, can make a change, and having people feel comfortable in their space, like you said, to talk about their illness, their stress, whatever they're going through, to get that help?
Well, I applaud people that stand on their platform and they use it for the good of the people. I applaud that in every way, shape, or form. And for those people who might be experiencing what's going on with them, they normalize it. So not just I'm getting abused, but it looks like, oh my God, LeBron James got abused as well too. So, okay, so I'm not an evil person, because that's what happens when you go into these situations with these people that have been abused or they've been traumatized. They believe that they deserve it because of whatever it is they did. They were born evil. They were this, they were that. When somebody uses their platform to say, no, you are okay, this happened to me, and we, you know, it is okay to say this happened, and it is okay to go get help, they normalize it for those people who may be struggling. And I am 100% for that type of behavior. However, because everybody has an opinion, because everybody has, you know, not everybody's going to agree. And of course, because some people are abusers, they're going to disagree and there will always be lashback. It doesn't matter how positive the speaker is or how positive the message is, if not happy with it. And unfortunately, you're just going to have to overlook them and keep pushing forward and pushing the positive message, because somebody needs to hear that. And I applaud anybody that uses a platform to do that.
And Tom, speaking of, someone's always going to have something to say. Tom writes in and says he understands that Simone was abused in college by the college coach, but could this just be her just being tired? And but you can't really get into it, Yanni, you can't get into a person's head. If she's saying she's mentally fatigued or stressed, isn't that what it is? That you got to take the person for, you know, their word is bond.
Anxiety affects everybody differently. It is a ugly, ugly thing. And a little bit of self-disclosure, I had a situation where one of my abusers attacked, you know, contacted me the other day, and it did not affect me until 2 days afterwards, and my chest felt like it was ready to explode. Even though I know how to do my coping skills, and I'm very effective at it, and I'm very good at choosing happiness, it of anxiety, stress, tension, trauma affects everybody differently. And I'm a pro at it. Not a pro. That's not true. We're not going to do that. But I have worked my coping skills to the point where I know when I'm okay and I know when I'm not. And so me saying that, oh, my God, I feel this tension in my chest. And even I related it to one of the clients I was seeing at the time. Hey, let's breathe together because I'm having a hard time. We don't know what that girl is going through. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. We don't know exactly what's going on. She may see the bar and see her abuser. We don't know.
Right.
She may do a flip and she may hear his voice or, I don't know, whatever the trainer there was, their voice in her head. And that might make her falter.
Yeah, Yoni, for God's sake, she said she forgot where she was when she was in the air.
Ooh, yeah.
That's the
thing.
Come on now.
That's the thing. That's the thing. She could have injured herself drastically. Oof. Okay. So, yes, 100% what you said. And even if she was tired, doesn't she afford it then?
I know. She's given all, you know, of her life and being abused, like you said, different. And then did she handled it? We don't know behind the scenes what she's going through. She's
right.
Just telling you, hey, I need to take a break. It's bad timing for you sports fanatics, but, hey, I need to take a break for a minute. And that's, you know, that's her right as herself, her person. So what are some of the signs to look for? I know this is sort of general, but if you can give some type of thing. You know, it's almost like when people – I had a family member that started off smoking cigarettes, then he went to marijuana, then he went to cocaine. Next thing you know, he's doing angel dust. So he graduated, right? So are there signs that you start off, you're just tired all the time, you're sleeping? What are some of the signs that you want to avoid so you won't get to some place where it's very, you know, almost fatal for you?
So with general depression, absolutely, you want to look for it's called hypersomnia. It's where you sleep long times, like 8 to 9 hours, and you're still tired when you get up. That's one of the things. It's avoiding contact, isolating yourself. Like you have good friends, you just don't want to talk to them right now. It is absolutely abusing substances, but sometimes you have to be careful with that one because if the person has addiction in their family, that can also be a heredity thing. So definitely those are some warning signs to watch for. Everything seems like it doesn't matter. It's never going to turn out right. When you see somebody taking that type of attitude, you want to check in with them. Like you say, hey, well, we can go here. It'll be okay. Nah, they're probably going to mess it up. When they have that negative mindset, you want to check in with them. When they're oversleeping a lot and they're still not, you know, they're still not rested enough, then you definitely want to check in with them. Overeating and or not eating enough. It could be either one of those. Overeating, eating your emotions, that is definitely a sign, a telltale sign of a depression. And also not eating enough, that's also a telltale sign of depression. So for anxiety, which is what a lot of us survivors suffer from, you want to watch for spiraling thoughts. Now, this is something that normally only the person can tell you that they're going through. They will talk themselves into a frenzy. They will overthink, overworry, and it'll go into a circle. Their thoughts will start racing. They can't even get a hold of one without thinking about something else. Everything is negative. Again, back to that. Breaking out in sweats, and they don't know why. Random triggers. Oof. There's a lot of things when it comes to anxiety. Anxiety is so tricky.
And you talked about
two
things you talked about that kind of can be misconstrued, and I don't want to, you know, beleaguer it, but you mentioned with the fact that if they have they're abusing some form of substance. I told you about a family member or alcohol or whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. that might be hereditary. So how do people decipher? I guess they need to see someone, a professional like yourself, to determine that. And also, you know, sweats. I know my sister went through menopause and she would break out in sweats and stuff. So, that's something you have to kind of look at that.
So the first thing when you're dealing with, when a therapist, when you go see a therapist, they're going to ask you, you know, medically, have you been checked out? If it's something that could be caused by, I mean, most of us have been very well versed in getting yourself checked out medically before you come see a therapist or come see a psychiatrist, because we want to make sure, we want to eliminate anything that might be. And like I said, this is not for you, and I always say this in my show, this is not for you to go diagnose anybody. Please do not be like, you got depression. Don't do that. Okay, because you're going to end up in a fight. What you can do is say, hey, sis, I noticed that you're sleeping a lot and you're not eating anything and you don't ever go out anymore. Are you okay? Can I check in with you? What's been going on? How's, you know, and check in all around. I call them hitting all the bases. What's going on in school? What's going on at work? What's going on with your family? What's going on with your relationships? What's going on with your friends? Hit all of the, you want to make sure you hit all of the bases so that you can hear everything. And you two together can decipher, oh, okay, it sounds like you're having a hard time with this. Let's go talk to somebody. Or, I mean, there are tons of wonderful things that you can do online. I do know that seeing a therapist is expensive, but there are things that you can go online and see people. And also the Medicare Act was passed so that hopefully that there are people that are able to go see a therapist now. I do therapy over everything. I love therapy because you get to talk and you get to work out in your head how you can change the narrative about things that have happened in the past, and it makes you feel better about things. And that's why I love therapy. But I'm on the soapbox, so let me get off.
Well, you always, every time you come on, and myself included in the audience, we always feel good about ourselves when you leave. So I want you to take the time out to talk about your practice and how people can reach out, your social media and your show. Of course, you have the floor. Take all the time you need.
Okay. I love it. Okay. So I am a licensed master's of social work, and I have a show called A Dose of the Dime. And what we do is we talk about relationship issues. Like right now, like tomorrow, we're going to wrap up on narcissists and gaslighting. So a lot of people are not quite sure exactly what that is. They've heard these $10 catchphrases. Oh, he's a narcissist. Oh, my God, this is toxic. Oh, they're gaslighting me. And I want to break it down so that if you are being gaslighted, you at least have these weapons in your arsenal so that you know what to do and that you can move forward. So my goal is to create better relationships for our people, for you, for, you know, and whoever else that you have listening to us. So you can always reach me at www.thedjdime.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm also on Pinterest and Twitter. I don't do much on Twitter, but anyway. And I'm also on YouTube, but you guys can check me out. And, of course, every Friday at 9:30, Eastern Standard Time, I do A Dose of the Dime, but of course that is 8:30 Central Standard Time. So you guys are welcome to come check me out. If you know, I do have a Facebook group that is open to the public. It is called A Dose of the Dime Radio Show, and on there we just talk about relationships, and sometimes I will take from the post that we post and I put it on a radio show, and I also go on live when I go on the radio so you guys can see me while I, you know, chop this up. But if you guys ever have questions, comments, concerns, or you want to pose a topic, I'm open and receptive to it. So please hit me up. You got the numbers. Make it happen.
Got to bring up the Central Time. You know, you just got to bring the Central Time, man. You know, Connecticut time.
It's central.
We're Connecticut.
It's central. It's central to the heart of the program, sir. Oh, he wasn't ready.
She is a joy to have. Well, I tell you, she her conversation is impactful, and she definitely knows what she talks about. And please do check out her Facebook page, but also do check out the show. Airs Friday mornings, 9:30 Eastern Time, A Dose of the Dime with Yanni. And, of course, after
Locker Talk with Barry Barnes. And you can listen to the show at thebachelornews.airtime.pro or at 646-929-0130. And, of course, on her Facebook page, you can see her there live. Yanni, I appreciate you. Be careful. God bless. I will talk with you tomorrow morning.
All right, peace and blessings, people. Have a wonderful one, and be a blessing to somebody today.
Absolutely.
Sometimes we fall in love. Oh.
interested in advertising on the show or having your own show, email us at labachelor40@gmail.com.
You might know me, I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are fewer than 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You must be your fairy godmother.
In the classic fairy tale, Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It fits.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in there.
Especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size.
Oh, that does make a difference.
To make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Happy to see you. Thank you.
Remember, you're responsible for protecting your children. Their happily ever afters are in your hands. For even more information about choosing the right car seat, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You made my summer burning fire. You're getting to be my one desire. You're getting to be all that matters to me.
Think about you.
Oh, baby.
Think about you.
Welcome back to the show. I want to go to Gerald Hoover. Gerald Hoover is a best-selling author and certainly does a phenomenal job, his My Hero series, and we'll talk about that. But I wanted to touch base with you and ask you, in this COVID-19, there's two things going on. We'll start with the education side. As you're a professor, you're an author of those series. You talk about not only bullying and mentoring, but education. I mean, being able to spell, being able to write a check. I mean, even if you don't write checks, to learn how to write, signature, things of that nature, the basic things. You know, kids don't even know their home keys. Remember when we were kids, we had to type, mm-hmm. We knew the home key and all that. But right now, mm-hmm. In this COVID-19, and we're short on time, so I want you to really get into it. What are the pluses and minuses on online schooling? In the beginning, my kids were like, you know what? Yeah, this is cool. We get to do it. But now they're getting bored, and they want to be around their friends. So socially is different. But from an education learning standpoint, especially with black and brown kids who are not only disadvantaged in some cases in neighborhoods, the books and all of those things, what's the pluses and minuses of learning online?
Well, I'm going to go with more of the, it ain't that many pluses to me. I think it's more of the pluses that there's something happening as opposed to just being shut down and there's nothing happening at all. So at least there's something tangible that's being used. You know what I mean? Can it work? Yeah, I mean, it can. But like you just mentioned, that social, the social part of it is part of the dynamic of being able to know how to get along with your teammates. I call them teammates, with classmates, knowing how to function, as opposed to everything being robotic, pressing a button. And that's the one thing I fear, LA, is that with my book, I have a curriculum, and my curriculum is a full charge curriculum where there's a lot of writing involved. And that's by design, because, you know, studies show that your memory is enhanced by writing things down. Also, you use a certain part of the brain when you're writing, as opposed to just touching a button. You use a certain part of the brain when you're reading, as opposed to just things being something you digitally. And I think that's where we're going to have a problem. Again, the plus is that we're doing something, you know, so it's better than nothing, but the minuses are a lot. It's and like you said, your young men are getting bored. It's a lot. And then what happens is the kids are so inundated with these video games. You know, everything's digitized. You know what I mean? So they can be playing Fortnite for 4 or 5 hours. Now all of a sudden you're slowing the pace. Now you're trying to tell them to teach. Now you're trying to tell them to learn that way. It's a lot. So they have to reprogram themselves on even how to learn, as opposed to being away from the computer, you know, instead of being away from the computer and being instructed by a teacher or some sort in front of them, where he or she is able to do things live, you know, and in person, so to speak, and sort of have the option of learning things on the fly as well, doing things on the fly. You really can't do things too much like that when you're online. You have to, you know, you have to kind of robot yourself a little bit as well. So, but again, pluses is that they're doing something. Minuses are a lot. And what I fear is that our children won't get the benefit of really being promoted in a proper manner, meaning earning the promotion. Because right now, you really can't fail a kid. I mean, you can't. I mean, how can you? You know, I mean, how do you fail a kid that parents may be suffering from COVID, and you know what I mean, and themselves might have had it.
And who that's a really great point, because if you have a marginal kid, a kid that's been struggling, it's probably not doing a great service for that child if you pass them because of the situation and the climate we are in. And even before mm-hmm. this, speak to, because I think we had this conversation before about using. You know, I have a real issue with kids using calculators for math. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And not mm-hmm. counting, not writing things out. Like you said, I tell my kids all the time, write it mm-hmm. down, take notes. They can go into my studio, my office, and see nothing but notes. And I try to tell them not only mm-hmm. take good notes, but make sure you have organized notes. So when you come back to it, mm-hmm. you know what it is. You put your name, date, all that kind of stuff. And some mm-hmm. I see some of the kids that don't do that, but I have a real issue when they use sort of these electronic things or things
that take away from counting and reading and all of these things, audio and things of that nature?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to give you an analogy because I know you'll catch it. Well, I'm going to give you a saying. I'm going to give you an analogy. You know that old saying, if you don't use it, you lose it, right? So we understand that part. But now, picture a person that's a couch potato, straight-up couch potato, remote in his hand and beer in the other hand, eating chips, doing this for years, watching TV, you know, shape got different, what have you. Then you say, okay, I want you to get in shape, the best shape of your life within 3 weeks. But tonight we're going to start off with you running 5 miles. That person wouldn't walk good four blocks. I mean, 5 blocks really good without him like, oh, my gosh, I'm tired. And that's the same thing that's happening with our baby's brains because they're not using that part of the brain. Like you just mentioned, all you're doing is pressing the button. You're not trying to figure things out in your head. You know what I mean? So you're not exercising that part of the brain. And we know the brain is an organ, but it acts as a muscle. You might as well call it a muscle because it acts just like a muscle. But if you don't use certain things to critically think, conceptualize things, figure things out in your head, ponder over stuff, if you don't use that part of the brain when it's time to use it, think about how many people, I guarantee you, at your audience, if you ask them, if you have read a book, if you ask them if they have read a book or a long article in a long time, and if they're going to do it before they go to sleep, and say read the article, I guarantee you they fall asleep before they do it. Because that brain ain't being used. So now you're going to tell me, read all this, you know what I mean, within a certain period of time, that brain it gets overloaded, and then all of a sudden it starts to shut down because you have to build it back up. And so this is what's happening in L.A. with too many of our children because they're so used to pressing buttons from video games to learning that when you tell them to do certain things, either they can't do it, they don't want to do it, or they don't know how to do it. So guess what? It's not done. And my fear, I mean, I'm saying as a my son is 29 years old, so I'm not a concerned parent for him, but I'm a concerned parent for others. Because as an educator, every child that comes into your classroom or any of me when I go to schools, those children become my children. And I say it openly. I'm like, for the time being I'm here, you belong to me.
That's right.
And I treat them as they're my children. And so my fear is that because they took penmanship out of schools, you know, so these kids don't know how to write cursively, nor can they read it. So I'll use the word script. Not only can they not read in script, they can't write it. So they can't read it. So now you're telling the 18-year-old, 19-year-old, go register to do this, sign this application, go do this, and they say sign your name, he's writing in print. He or she writing in print. And to believe it or not, the way they write, they're not even writing online. I mean, in other words, you tell a kid to write in print on the line, they're writing in between the line. And they're putting their name, like, they've got it across the line because they don't have a concept of writing, bro. That is, like, scary.
Yeah.
And that's happening worse for our black and brown babies than it is for other children because other children, the ones that have the means to it, they're being taught how to write in script.
Sure.
So education system, it seems that put that on the parents, which is not fair. When I say fair, because that's a basic requirement, writing. You know what I mean? That should be something that should be cataloged in schools and should be progressed in schools because L.A., that's how we learn. You know what I mean? Our timetables, we get that in school.
Right.
Our writing, our penmanship, you know, writing between the lines, our tracing. You know what I mean? We did that in school because it was part of our curriculum.
Although I write like a doctor without the money, but I mean, sign like a doctor.
No, me too. And here's the funny thing. Me too, and I'm ambidextrous with it. I can write with both hands, left hand, right hand. I can do both, and I can write equally sloppy. So we're in the same boat.
Yeah.
I get that. But at the end of the day, my friend, we can read that. We can read some lots of sloppy handwriting too because we're accustomed to doing it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But again, our babies aren't getting that privilege. And with that, they're going to lose so much in this fake, illusion-filled, digital-based world.
Right.
Because it's really an illusion.
Yeah.
It's an illusion, bro. It's an illusion.
Talk
these smartphones have made us dumb.
talking with Gerald Hoover, a best-selling author of My Friend, My Hero, a book targeting young black and brown boys ages 12 and up, here on the Bachelor News Radio Show, Bachelor News Radio Network, and WCOM, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, North Carolina. And we'll get to the book series and info there. Really sort of the final phase, and I know you said there's positives because they're doing something, but again, the concern I have is that even before the virus, even before they had to go online, and some are going back to school in certain places, and I mean, you can get into if it's safe or not, that's a whole different discussion for another day. But the fact is that, you know, kids, even before the virus, and I have to, again, I challenge mine all the time, work is not, I wouldn't say it was necessarily fun for us, but, mm-hmm. you know, we knew we had to do that, and we knew at the end of the day it was going to make us better. Even sometimes we mm-hmm. didn't feel like going to school. I tried to play hooky. My mother found out all the time, but I had to do what I had mm-hmm. to do. And it didn't seem mm-hmm. as forced on us as it is with kids. Kids are like, okay, if you do this, you can play this, or you can go outside, and they pushing, they zooming through it. But at the same time, you want to tell them, no, take your time, because a lot of teachers say, take your time, read the questions, you know, when you're taking a test. And it seems like these kids, our kids, are trying to zoom through a lot of the work, and they don't seem to get it. It's more robotic than mm-hmm. consumption and understanding and comprehending it. You buy mm-hmm. that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's a fear. And matter of fact, you said it eloquently, but you basically repeated what I was saying and the way I said it. When our babies get a certain age, they're not going to be able to function other than doing what they've known. It's almost like putting they put the blinds on horses, run a straight line. They won't know how to do anything else. But it's not set in stone this way, they won't be able to do it. And that's where too many of our children are going to fail. That's where they're going to fail, because they won't have options on how to do things any other way. And that's a criminal act, if you ask me. It's a criminal act. It's because... And that's why I said fake, illusional, filled world, because you'll say, oh, no, he got a so-and-so on his test. But, yeah, he was pressing a button that you helped him press, because you're trying to get that funding because the state mandated so-and-so and so-and-so, which the state has no – they have no clue what's going on the ground. They're a bunch of bean counters and doing whatever they're doing. They have no clue or concept of what is done on the educational level. None. Because if they did, or if their children was in the belly of the beast – They wouldn't have that kind of outlook.
Just to interrupt too, if our kids aren't learning, again, pre and post COVID-19, they're ready to mm-hmm. put them on meds, you know, Ritalin and whatever,
LA, I believe it or not, pre COVID. And matter of fact, we've had discussions about my book before COVID. Pre COVID, well, I started my curriculum 2 years ago. I mean, like getting it in stone. So I'm well ahead of the COVID part. I was yelling and screaming about in 25 years, if we're not careful, that we're going to have an educational apocalypse. I was saying this for about 2 years now. Now, it's probably going to be closer than that, because we're going to lose 2.5 years. Okay, first of all, for every child I was already behind, tack on 2 more years. You know, they're not going to fail a kid. They're going to promote them socially. But think about the average 10th grader that's ready for college, getting ready for college in 2 years. They're going to be functioning on a 6th grade reading level or 6th grade work level.
So that
means when they graduate high school and graduate to go to college, it's going to be a real challenge.
So real quick, because we're running out of time, what would be some of the solutions you have, you know, right now with COVID and moving forward? And please do... let people know how they can get My Friend, My Hero. Talk about the book and where they can find it.
Sure. Well, I'll do that first because it's fresh in my head. My website is called The Hero Book Series. Right, TheHeroBookSeries.com. For those that are educators or they want to do some homeschooling, help them enhance, you can order my book, and I will even let you know how to get the curriculum to go with it. Now, the curriculum... it has a study guide, which you have to write, read, do some research and learn how to words, how to put words together, context clues. I mean, it was the same thing that would happen in the school. Also have a teacher's edition to where you have the answers. So for you parents that have young children, okay, Johnny, do this, do this, do this. You as a parent, whether you've been to school lately or not, it's okay. You have the teacher's guide. You have the answers to the sentences. You have the answers to the multiple choice stuff. You have all the answers. I even have a pretest. So you can say, here, Johnny, take this and let me see how you can do with that. Then I have what's called a unit assessment. And I have answers for that as well. So you have a student success guide, you have a teacher's edition, and you have a unit assessment. So you have all those, and you're good. What I would suggest, put a physical book in your child's hand. E-learning is fine. My book is on tape now. It's coming out about a month. I even have e-books, which, okay, I'm not really for them, but I know people, grown-ups want to read it like that. That's fine. But put a physical book in your hand. The five senses that we're blessed with are given to us for a reason. Putting a physical book in your hand speaks volumes to the mental, soul, mind, and body. There's a lot of, and go on YouTube and research how the effects are of touching a book. Google that. Touching a book.
Wow.
How powerful. You start that. Your knowledge starts, L.A., with just touching the book. It's powerful. I just saw that. I just saw something like that the other day. And it's funny because I've been thinking about it. Because, you know, I'll give you an example. Let me say this really quick. I know you're short on time. In the Bible, in church, people have told me, I remember old ministers would tell me, I would say, well, Elder so-and-so, what do I read in the Bible? What should I do? They would tell me, say a prayer, put your hand on top of the Bible, and just open it. Meaning, you'll find it. you know what I'm saying? Ella, you know where I'm going. There was something powerful about putting your mind right with it, becoming one with the story that you're about to read, and then opening the book deep with that. That's deep. And so we keep giving these books, these digital books and everything. You ain't helping these kids. Put a book in your hand. Put a physical book. The five senses are given to us for a reason.
That's right.
If you dummy us out with that, we ain't going to have them, buddy. People going to be robots.
That's right.
It's not going to work for us.
Yeah.
It's not going to work for us, bro.
And the learning is robotic at this point because of that.
Come on, man.
Yeah, you're right.
Come on, man.
We
can't afford that, bro.
We can't. And you talk about apocalypse. Oh my God! You get your Negro dominance points because you have been talking about this for quite some time. So I know that for a fact. Hoov, I love you, man. Appreciate you. Be safe.
I'll talk
with you very, very soon. We'll get you on next week and talk some more about this. Okay.
My pleasure, my brother.
Take care, man. All right, man.
Now, your favorite music apps are available on Contour. Go from watching a musical to listening to your favorite music. Enjoy a country western and then a country jam. Or go from action flicks to something that makes you feel like an action hero. Now with Contour from Cox.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show, the Bastard News Radio Show on WCOM in Chapel Hill, the Bastard News Radio Network, IBM TV, Big Mind Entertainment. You can see it on Amazon and Fire Stick at Roku and WCLM as well. We thank all of our guests that come on. I'm going to go back to the phones, bring in two of my favorites. Have been MIA for a minute, but always good to have these brothers on. We do our brothers at the round table to talk some sports and delve into some sports. Of course, from BASN Newsroom, the editor-in-chief there, Tony T-Mac McLean, and, of course, Orlando Hughes. He is the owner and play-by-play voice of KRSB Radio in Philly. And brothers, I appreciate you all coming on. It's been a minute, but thank you for your time.
Have a dawn.
What's up, LA? What's going on, T-Mac?
How are you?
What's going on? Hey, listen, real quick, Orlando, I thought about you when I saw Carson Wentz got hurt and the whole situation in Philly. We're going to come back to our Sixers in a minute and get some thoughts. But really, I want to just go real quick. We do rapid fire so we get everything in on time here. First thing, real quick, no surprise, about Simone Biles and the fact that she took a mental break, and she being a person of color, she being a woman, of course, you had the negative talk, but she did have some positive. At the end of the day, I'll start with you, T. How much does the sports voice, especially with social media, you look at a guy like LeBron, he just comes out with all kinds of stuff to say, and all the millions of people follow him on Twitter and everything else. How much does a voice, especially when it's something as focused as a mental stress or illness, really makes an impact in mainstream society?
Well, it's cliche, but it must be said, sports is a reflection of life. And what we saw, play out with Simone plays out with probably more of these athletes than we think. I think there are other, through all the stories that were talked about with her, to no surprise, unfortunately, they missed the main point, I feel, was the whole situation with her and the former U.S. Gymnastics coach, Larry Nassar, who was sexually abusing a bunch of his athletes, including Miss Biles.
And, that's right.
She was right up there in the forefront involved in that. And don't think that that hasn't been a factor over the years. Now, she's been able to overcome that, but, there are times when it just becomes a little too overwhelming. I think it happens more than we know. It's just that in this instance where we saw with Simone and we saw with Naomi Osaka earlier this year, they just said, you know what? I'm taking a break because of me. Now, I guess the only thing we could sort of compare it to a certain extent for a lot of people was when Dick Vermeil quit as the Eagles coach back in the, I think, like early 80s, and he basically right. said he was burnt out. And people were sort of like, okay, no problem. But see, again, when a white guy does it, it's sort of like, oh, okay, we're going to be sympathetic to that. But if it's a black person, whether they be female or male, people got a problem with it because, you're not supposed to take any time off. You're supposed to be able to deal with what we throw at you, they don't look at us as human beings or what have you. And again, that's reflective of non-sports folks as well, because they don't see us as human in a lot of instances. They see us as their entertainment. They see us as they look at us as subservient. So whenever they don't perform, in a sense, to their liking, they're going to have a problem with it. And when you throw in all the fake jingoism and everything else that goes with the Olympics, it just becomes a firestorm.
Yeah, and to Tony's point, Orlando, Laura Ingram of that Fox channel told LeBron, just dribble the damn ball. To Tony's point, like, no, these sports people to see it through a lens didn't see it. She was, like Tony pointed out eloquently, that she was already abused in college by Nassar, and then, she put herself on the line even after that. So she was being not only take care of herself, the woman says she forgot she was in the air flipping. That's hello. If you're in the air and you forgot that you're in the air, that you need to take a break, right? But that don't mean you're gonna go out and shoot everybody else, and do something. You need a break. You need to talk to. You're stressed out, like Tony said. Dick Vermeil did it. Oh, good for him. I applaud him and all that. But not only that, she's being selfless by telling her team, I can't help you right now. I'm not focused. So y'all do it to the best of your ability, and maybe I'll come back. Of course she did, but I just thought, it's just really ridiculous.
No, it's very ridiculous. And you were talking to who just about, what the pandemic has done. So these are athletes that train for years for virtually, a 60-second show or a 2-minute show? if they're dancing on the floor, or a 5-second pole vault. So the mental capacity of both Simone, Naomi, I applaud them for that. And for those who don't want change and is not accepting of what that generation is trying to do and say, and Simone is no, she's amateur by the Olympic rules, but she's not new to this. So I applaud her. I can care less about what Laura Ingraham says or any of the a-holes on Fox or MSNBC or to steal a cliche from Tony the Mouse, have to say about her. You know,
right.
That's her right. And you're correct in saying to be able to stand up to your team and tell your team that I can't provide for the team, that's the hardest feeling. I had this conversation with someone I'm very close to, and the opinion that person had was like, well, if she knew she wasn't there, she's robbing someone of an opportunity to be in the Olympics. No, she's there because she's still the best at what she does, but she had no focus. Serena had to take a step away. Venus took a step away. All of these people take steps away from the game because the level that they function on is part of a 1 percentile of athletes. We're all athletes. You know, back in the day, I could hit a couple of shots, but I don't function on the level of a Hall of Fame football player or something like that. So, you know, I say that, you know, I'm always the hell with people. You can't talk how it is to live in somebody else's shoes. Only you walk in your own shoes.
Right. And then, you know, to the person, your friend has said that, I mean, yeah, she plotted to take the space of somebody else. First of all, she's the best in the world, so she's not – who's going to take her spot? But, yeah, she plotted to let them take her spot. And then all of a sudden decided, well, you know what, I wonder. I mean, again, like you said, and a lot of us would say, nobody can be in her head or any of our heads what we go through on a regular. Imagine what we do on a local, on a smaller level, and we go through stress. We wearing stuff that multiple hats and things on our shoulders. Imagine what she's going through. And throw in the millions of people for and against in social media on her. That just add all that in. I just thought it was really ridiculous. But big up to her doing her thing. She's still the greatest in my book, and I wish her well. I want to switch gears to the NBA. Go back to UT first. Winners and losers. Before you kind of give me a couple of teams you thought were winners and losers in free agency, I would think that you're pretty excited about your Knicks and the fact that they kept everybody in place, including Randall, and they bring in Fournier, they keep Rose, they bring in Noel, keep Burks, they got Gibson re-signed, and then they bring in Kemba. You know, he's a hometown favorite anyway. When you look at this roster, obviously, again, nobody's saying the Knicks are going to be in the, you know, an NBA final, but I think the maturity of this administration and this front office and how they're handling the players now, I think this is an extreme step in the right direction. Again, bringing in Kemba is a good move for them.
Well, I wanted Kemba 2 years ago, so this
right,
is, you know,
too.
This,
yep.
This is, you know, but all that being said, though, you know, they still have all this cap room, so and bringing back the same team is somewhat okay, but I was kind of hoping that they was going to add a little bit more. I still think I'm still hoping that at some point they do add more, because I think when you see what Miami is doing, when you see what other teams in the East and in the West are doing, there's still a lot more that needs to be done. I'm somewhat pleased, but I know there's been the Dame Lillard rumors have been out there for a while, and I keep going back and forth, you know, as to whether he's going to be the guy. And also with Leonard turning down an extension from the Clippers. There's always the possibility, with him there. But I'm gonna just right now, I'm just gonna be like, it's okay, but yeah, I'd like to see them do a little bit more right now.
But a couple of points too, T, though. One, you're right. They do have a lot of cap space. Number one. Number two, I'm glad they didn't get into the Westbrook thing, and I'm glad Philly didn't. I'm going to get to Orlando on that too, because there was rumors about him trying to go there and all this other stuff. Three, Lillard is still out there. And four, I mean, Milwaukee's going to be Milwaukee. You see the Nets are rebuilding their roster, so they'll be there. I don't know what the Celtics doing. They got Cantor, and that's it. So, I mean, the Knicks add a few more pieces. Again, I'm not saying that they're the elite team in the East, but if they add more pieces and smart decisions, really, to me, is the moral of the story for them, then I think they're heading in the right direction. You can look at them as in Atlanta, the team they lost to, and they really didn't do anything but re-sign Trae Young and Collins. But, it's the sky's the limit at this point, especially with the cap space.
Well, yeah, and see, Atlanta just basically kept their nucleus. I mean, remember they were they got to the Eastern Conference semifinals, so they wanted to they made sure that Young wasn't going to be plucked out of the air and Collins. So I think they did fine. Like I said, I just me as a Knicks fan, I'm still sort of expecting a little bit more. Now, I don't want to just bring somebody in for the sake of bringing somebody in, but it's just the main thing is to just keep the momentum. Just to keep moving forward. It would be silly for them to have the breakthrough and then not make the playoffs and in a sense take a step backwards. That's the only thing I fear.
What about the two finals teams in terms of a grade you give them and Milwaukee and Phoenix? Obviously, Phoenix, listen, I'm a Chris Paul fan, not just because he's a Wake Forest guy, not just because he went back to an HBCU school, Winston-Salem State, but he's an all-around great guy and a great player. So anywhere he's gone, it's been the Midas touch, as we've seen in his career, T. So what about Phoenix and Milwaukee? They didn't do a lot, but what do you see them in terms of where they are going into next season?
Well, to be quite honest, and if everything goes as is, it wouldn't surprise me if they got back to the finals again. I think it might be a little, it might be a little rougher for Phoenix because, the West is getting better. I think people are sort of sleeping on their Warriors, when they do get Thompson back and you see the growth of Wiseman. At some point, Utah is going to break through, I think, at some point. And Milwaukee, Milwaukee is just going to be a matter of the whole thing of repeating is, especially in the NBA, is always tough. They'll still be in the mix. But, yeah, I think at least on the surface, they're still the two teams to beat right now, maybe Milwaukee more so than Phoenix.
Yeah, and I think as I go to Orlando, the Los Angeles Fakers got a lot of old dudes, and they got a lot of pieces. I love Carmelo, and he still can knock down shots. He probably is, in terms of all the old dudes, is probably going to be their best perimeter shooter. When you look at that, I mean, they bring in Ariza. Ariza 2 years, 3 years ago might have been more impactful, I think. And they bring in Ellington back in, and Dwight Howard, who played at Philly. I don't know about the Lakers, but when you look at you could comment on them, but when you look at Philly, okay, we let Howard go, we bring in a Drummond, and there's some questions about, hey, can Drummond and Embiid kind of coexist, and their personalities or whatever. I like bringing Danny Green back, to give him that experience, and that can make some shots in games, especially in the playoffs. But they, like Tony saying with the Knicks, I think they need to make moves. You're in Philly. You know how I feel about Ben Simmons. We as chronicled on this broadcast. You know that I said if he's not going to improve his shot game, if he's not going to be, he can't go zero in the playoffs in fourth quarter, Orlando. You know, Big O, he can't do that. And the rumors are he won't be back. He hasn't really put the effort in. You're there. Will he be back? Where are they going to add? Are they looking at Lillard seriously? What's going on in Philly, and what kind of grades would you give the you know, teams like the Lakers and some of the other top teams?
Well, I give the Lakers an A for manipulating the cap. They had no cap room, and to sign as many people as they signed, that was amazing. You know, whether you're a Laker hater or not, Laker fan, you got to give credit where credit's due. So Pelinka did his job out in L.A. With Jeannie Buss. As it relates to the Sixers, here it is. Ben Simmons will be gone. He will not be a 76er by the trade deadline. Now, there's a slight possibility that he may be back to start the season, but the Sixers, they're working on Dame. This is just my opinion here because I'm going to go way off the rails. I think the Sixers are trying to trade Tobias for Kawhi. So they will get rid of Ben, and they will get rid of Tobias Harris, and you will see Lillard and Kawhi with the Sixers. Now, the sad thing with this trade, we're going to either lose Maxey or we're going to lose Thibault in this exchange for Dame. But Ben Simmons has cut off all communications with the Sixers organization. He does not want to be back. The city's on him, as it should be, because this is a team with the best record over the last 3 years in all of the NBA. Only Utah can compare to them. And for them to lose three games in one series, one game you were up by 26 points, and Ben basically, you know, has a, you know, it is what it is attitude, that doesn't work in this city. That doesn't work. Once you pass D.C., that doesn't work in Philly, doesn't work in Brooklyn, New York, or Boston. You may be able to get away with that in Orlando or New Orleans, but you damn sure can't say that in Philadelphia. So he'll be gone. He'll be gone. I love what the Sixers did.
But Orlando, let me just ask you real quick, because this is our Sixers, and I don't want to beleaguer it, but I do want to ask, because if you're going to give up those guys to get Lillard, and I like the inside-outside thing that can happen. I do like Drummond coming in. I think he, you know, he's a younger version of Dwight Howard, and so I like that move. But do you want to end up like the Lakers, Brooklyn, where they kind of depleted their roster, now they're trying to get everything back? For Lillard, Lillard's a great shooter. He's a awesome, I mean, dead-to-red type shooter. He can shoot from anywhere on the court. But is that going to be too much to be given up for this guy?
No. I mean, listen, you got to give something to get something. So you're giving up a 24-year-old Ben Simmons, who I still think has potential. But he never embraced Philadelphia. And the way that he's acting since this playoff devastation has happened, I've rarely turned on sports since that, whatever was it, early June. Whenever that was that it happened, I know they messed up my family trip to Puerto Rico, losing all of those games. Ben Simmons never showed that he was apologetic towards the fans. Joel Embiid said, "I'm sorry." He did what Doc said. We owe you one. We'll get it back. That was the window. I think Milwaukee will still be good. But Milwaukee lost P.J. Tucker, and that's going to cripple them. I still don't think it's moves to be made on the trade deadline once the season starts and you'll see these teams ramp up. But for the Sixers, I think they'll be fine. Doc Rivers can't come back and coach another series like he did. Having Danny Green back is one thing. I really like our young players. The Sixers haven't had young players in a minute. They've always been trying to trade. I like Maxey. If he doesn't go, I walk him back. I told you this kid, Isaiah Joe from Arkansas, is the truth. And you know, we're going to be different because we won't be as good defensively. But you bring in Drummond, and as you mentioned, he's a younger Dwight, so he's still energetic to be there. That backs up Embiid. But you need to unlock Joel right now to be a Sixers fan, honestly. Without Ben, Joel becomes a different type of player. And this is somebody that should have been the MVP last year. So if he has a real point guard with him, just imagine how good his game's going to be. So.
Hello?
And I mean, if you want to continue. Yeah, I'm here, L.A. L.A., are you here?
Yep, I'm here. Tony, let me ask you this, because we're all Eastern Conference guys, and when you look at the East, I mean, the Bulls getting DeRozan, yeah, a nice move, but you don't expect much from them, as you mentioned with Atlanta, you know, extending Trae Young, bringing back John Collins. Everybody was after Collins, so that was a good move for them. But it, you know, is there anybody? Is it still Memphis? I mean, Milwaukee's to lose, or is Brooklyn the team to beat? They just didn't win because they didn't have the horses due to injury. Lando, same question.
Well, the one team I think people are sort of sleeping on, I think, is Miami. I know they sort of went small. I'm a little bit more optimistic about Milwaukee than O is, but I think Miami is somebody you have to, you know, look out for. I know that, you know, they sort of came out of nowhere last year, but, you know, that was the bubble, and you know, almost. I don't want to say it was a mirage, but it's just let's put it this way. I think they are a little bit better now than they were when they you know, made the run during the bubble. But yeah, it's to an extent, I guess it's Milwaukee's. My thing with the Nets was always, it was never about the quote unquote big three. It was always about Nash, because, you know,
right,
he was a neophyte as a head coach, and there were instances this year, and you know, you could make the argument if you had a more experienced coach, injuries, even with the injuries, do you lose a game 7 at home like that if you have an experienced coach? Now, let's face it, we've all had our whatevers with Budenholzer, but he's sitting with the ring now.
Right, and that's a great point, because he's been accused, Orlando, of not making adjustments within the game, especially sort of almost being stubborn with it. But as Tony said, he does have the ring. And you look at Miami, Orlando, I mean, Kyle Lowry coming in, that's big. That's who they wanted. You know, Butler got his max deal, so he could just kind of focus in on the game. As you mentioned, P.J. Tucker comes there. Oladipo signed, albeit a year, but he signed for another year. And, you know, they bring in, I believe it's done, and Markieff Morris. I think that gives them a perimeter guy who can rebound, shoot the ball. Tony's right. I mean, they and the Lakers made the most moves in this free agency. So when you look at the East, you know, Philly, like I said about the Knicks, I'm hoping, I don't know, you know better, the cap space and the trade value. I'm hoping they do more than just an Andre Drummond. And I'm hoping, and you're right, but I'm hoping somehow they can get creative like the Lakers did, and hopefully keep Tobias at the very least. I don't want to see a deal where Dragic from Miami's got to go to Toronto just to get Lowry. Dragic is a big guy. You know, it was a big part of what the Heat did, but they had to give him up. Well, I don't really want to see it, but maybe I'm just being, you know, naive and unrealistic.
Look, what Miami did and Pat Riley executed, that's the team that Pat Riley created the 2022 version of his 90 Knicks. You got Kyle, you have Jimmy, you have P.J. Tucker, and you got Markieff Morris and Bam. So the Heat will be physical. They'll be intimidating. I think they're on paper right now, the 3 seed behind Brooklyn and Milwaukee, I think our Sixers are fourth as it stands right now. I do question whether or not Kyle can play for Spoelstra. There'll be some kickback and feedback for that. But I say hats off to them and what they've done. To me, and I know we're talking about the East, I love what Golden State has done. And T-Mac opened up the segment talking about them. People were sleeping on them by getting Belisa and getting Otto Porter. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see the Warriors seriously make a run this year at it. But back to Miami, hats off to what Miami did. You know, hats off.
Yeah, and it's just to the Lakers. Everybody, the Lakers are the A-Rod of the NBA right now. You either love them or like them, and even with this move, I love Carmelo. I'm a big Carmelo guy. Just on and off the court, I'm just a big Carmelo dude. Gets to play with LeBron. I don't understand how either LeBron's the point or Westbrook's got, both of them have to have the ball to create and whatever. Not about points, but whatever. And I don't get those moves that they made. I like the Ellington, bring him back, and maybe Trevor Reeves or some of those guys, Bazemore, and I like those moves, but I don't understand what they're really trying to do, especially, T, when you look at AD. Even when he was healthy, didn't play well. He didn't play. He didn't play like he was 2 years ago. He struggled when he was in the game. And I said on this program to all of you before, this team with LeBron and AD is going to go as long as AD goes. Is he healthy and playing at the top of the level? As great as LeBron could be, he's still playing at the MVP level. This team is going to go as good as he can be. If he struggles, they're going to struggle. And so my concern, if I'm a Laker fan, which I'm not, is if LeBron's going to get hurt again, AD gets hurt, and how you mesh all them, you know, geriatric-type dudes, you know, and in terms of sports, right, to mesh them all together to make it work. I don't know.
My first thought is for this to work, for this to really be successful, you're going to have to get 65 to 70 games out of the quote-unquote big three, Westbrook, Davis, and LeBron. I don't think LeBron will have a hard time taking a quote-unquote step back because he, again, I've said this before and I'll say it again, he's more Magic than Jordan. So he's used to getting the ball to other folks. I don't think that'll be a problem for him, especially now that he's gotten older. Now, will he take over in certain games in the fourth quarter? Sure, of course. But the thing is, now everything isn't on him because, and we saw this more this year than we did last year, where it was you know, get the ball to LeBron, and that's how the Lakers would, you know, do well, especially during the time when Davis was out. The fact that they had to give up Kuzma and Caldwell Pope, that may come back to bite them down the road because I think those were your building. You know, if they were looking to make this a long-term thing for them down the road, you just gave away a couple of your building blocks. And, you know, you had to keep at least one of them. I mean, I was very surprised and to be honest with you, Washington, if they get this right, could be, I'm not saying they'll win the Eastern Conference, but I think Washington is definitely moving up the needles there. And I think it was a clear message to Bradley Beal saying, okay, we're building this around you. But yeah, for that to work in L.A., the big three are going to have to play 65 to 70 games. And I know they're going to try to do a lot of load management during the year and all the other stuff, and that's fine. But the thing is, you don't want to be, you know, on the job training in, you know, March and April when you're fighting for a playoff spot, especially when on the surface, you're not even going to be a top three or top four seed at this point in time right now.
Yeah, and Orlando, Tony's right. When you think about it, LeBron can still be MVP or in that conversation. But I think he's spot on when he says that LeBron's going to take – he could take a step back and do his thing fourth quarter regular season, fourth quarter playoffs. He could take over if he wants to, but he could take the – but my concern is Westbrook and how his style of play – with the motor, because he is, when you look at it, for the most part, in the starting lineup especially, is going to be like the young dude. Like, he's the youngest dude. So that energy and the way he plays, his style of play, is it going to match up with how the Lakers try to do things? And AD, by the way, has something to prove. He wants to make sure that he says, okay, the naysayers, you know, I was hurt, but I'll be back. And then, by the way, people make this argument about how, you know, people are picking on the Lakers, these Laker lovers, and that's okay, that's fine. But, you know, facts are facts. Anthony Davis, as great as he is, I've been saying it since he came to the league, when he played at Kentucky, the guy can play, but he cannot stay healthy. That's a fact. Just look at the numbers. It's a total fact. So it's a matter of how it mesh. It kind of reminds me of a different version of the Buccaneers. You know, of course, they got a lot of breaks, but they meshed at the end, and they got it right with all the superstars. If that can happen, Orlando.
You put a lot of ifs in that. I'm not a fan of Anthony Davis. I've never been a fan of Anthony Davis. I thought that he could have done more with the Pelicans as the focal point down there with Jrue Holiday and Boogie Cousins. I felt that he really left the people of Louisiana, in particular the fans of New Orleans, he left them short, and they're still searching for something. LeBron, we talked about this 2 years ago. LeBron has now began the biggest challenge of his life, and that's battling time. So we've seen him injured now a couple of seasons in a row. Russell Westbrook, Russ is going to do his thing. LeBron has to change his game. And T hit a key component for them. Caldwell Pope is going to be missed. You bring in, you know, even though he's a Philly guy, you bring in Wayne. I thought the signing of Kendrick Nunn was nice for them. Kent Bazemore is probably like one of these little trashy airplanes that I'm looking at now at the FBO. He's a cheap Hyundai, if that. Not even a Hyundai. Hyundai's actually good cards. He's garbage. I don't like him. Re-signing of Dwight could help, but who are you going to go? Marcus Saul? What are you really getting? And I don't think that they're the best team. I think the best team out west is still Phoenix, then followed by Utah, then I would go Golden State, then the Lakers. I think they're the fourth best team.
I agree with you. I think that Phoenix keeping their core really helps. It's going to be interesting, to Tony's point with Utah. They got to, you know what, or get off the pot at some point. Let's see if they can do that. And the Clippers, again, on paper, you look at the Clippers, and it's interesting to see what the Kawhi is going to do. We know that, Chris Paul opted out of his deal to get a different deal to stay in Phoenix. We'll see what happens with Kawhi. Want to switch gears real quick to baseball and the trades that took place there, Tony. Again, when you look at all the top teams that made deals, obviously Yankees get Rizzo and Gallo, but I was looking for pitching. And Rizzo certainly has hit the ball. Gallo's done some things, but they're still on the outside looking in, knee pitching. The Mets have really helped themselves and Baez and other guys. And you look at what the Dodgers are like they're the Yankees of the West. They're the Lakers. Like, it's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, they get Scherzer. They already got all that talent. And, by the way, that just speaks to the credit of the Giants of playing lights out all year. But when you look at all the moves that have been made from the contenders, Philly, obviously a game and a half behind your Mets, Yankees behind,
half a game now, I think, because I think they beat Washington. So, and the Mets literally and figuratively limp into Philly this weekend after leaving 115 guys on base against the Marlins.
Well, so you're still up going into this pivotal matchup with Philly. Obviously, you see them again, and then of course the Yankees. You look at the Oakland; they're still behind them. When you look at the leaders, the White Sox, Houston, you know, obviously the Giants we mentioned, and by the way, nobody's really. To me, because it's East Coast bias, talking about the Brewers and the type of year they have, although they had two big devastating injuries. Talk about these moves and some of the winners and losers in these trades.
Well, the best move may have been the Giants getting Bryant, because, number one, they didn't have to give up a lot for him. He gives them another bat in that lineup, and also – he can play everywhere. You know, I was watching another night. He was playing second base. Now, he also can play in the outfield as well. You know, the Giants are that team that you know, we knew that there was going to be at least one team that was going to, quote-unquote, come out of nowhere to, you know, do something. And clearly them, and I guess you can make an argument for the Red Sox as well. But, yeah, the Giants are a testament to pitching and defense. And they were getting – I mean, the offense has been okay. You know, Posey taking the year off has probably been the best thing that could ever happen to them. But then you add Bryant to that mix, and, you know, look, I think the Dodgers were sort of paying homage to the Giants by going out and getting getting Scherzer and Turner.
Great point.
So, yeah. So, and you know, and remember the Padres were in the mix for him as well. I know there were other teams that were also trying to, you know, look, Scherzer is a difference maker. Even at his age, he is still a difference maker. If you saw any a little bit of what he did last night, the guy still brings it every night. You know, we just you know, just the whole bulldog thing and what have you. Now, is that going to be enough for the Dodgers? Look, I thought the Dodgers – I thought it was the Dodgers to lose, but the Giants have basically changed that conversation. And, you know, the Padres are still in the mix, although if they keep losing Tatis for these little chunks of time, it's not going to help them in the long run. Again, I think very quietly the Giants made probably the best in the sense of what Bryant can bring for them overall. And American League-wise, I guess maybe to a certain extent, I guess whether you may want to admit it or not, the Yankees making the moves to their lineup because they've put themselves back in the mix now. I mean, they still, you know, every team still wants one more pitcher. There's very few teams. I mean, even the Dodgers. You know, we thought the Dodgers were going to be sort of a rollover for them, but you know, the whole thing with Bauer off the field and some of the other things as well wasn't a slam dunk. So. The good thing is that it's still up in the air because even though the Giants have the best record in all of baseball, it's still anybody's to win right now in both leagues.
Right. Right, and they have the best record that with the White Sox and then Astros not too – I mean, hell, the Tampa Bay Rays as well. So when you look at it, you know, they're not out of the, you know, realm of losing that position. And you're right. I mean, certainly, I mean, Rizzo and Gallo coming in, when you look at the left-right thing in the lineup, I think it helps the Yankees. But you're right also is that we need pitching. Orlando, how all in – our Philly fans, more importantly, the front office, to try to get this team over the hump. Atlanta's having a down year. Mets have been solid. I've been saying they would be. Philly right there, big matchup coming up. How all in are they? And when you look at this team from a standpoint of, pitching and then their lineup kind of being on and off again, now, how serious should we take the Phillies in terms of moving forward in the National League? Because I really think, again, I think it's the Brewers to lose. They play well last year. They're lights out this year. They got the pitching. They're getting the hitting. They've been consistent in every category on both hitting and ERA. So they're going to be a tough out anyway. But how serious should people take the Phillies?
You take them about as serious as spelling the name Philly. Philly, people aren't really vested in the Phillies. This city's still butthurt over the Sixers, as I mentioned earlier. They're still looking for Matt Klintak's address in Jersey somewhere, wherever he lives over in Jersey. So if you know it, please post it. They made a nice trade. They got rid of Spencer Howard. But this is probably the worst fielding baseball team that I've seen over the last 20 years. Like,
you mean in Philly, you mean? In Philly?
Yeah. Didi was a solid shortstop. And I don't know what happened to Didi. Harper, great guy, loves the city. The city loves him back. But I don't feel, like, impressed by them. Today, you figure Aaron Nola was on the mound against a dreadful Washington Nationals team, and he gave up 5 runs. They won the game thanks to Reese Hopkins' walk-off double. Not a walk-off, but his double in the ninth. But I'm not impressed with this team, man. I'm not impressed with this team. People in the city really don't believe in this team. If they get to the playoffs and we have a playoff game in October, hooray. But, no, people aren't really interested. People are talking about Dame Lillard and the Sixers, Ben Simmons. They're talking about
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, the possibility, not even Jalen Hurts, the possibility of getting Deshaun Watson here.
Oh, yeah, right.
And Nick Sirianni, believe it or not, has proven to be a decent coach thus far. So I'm impressed by what the Eagles are doing, and they're under the radar. So, but you asked me about the Phillies. How in are they? I guess if I come in the right door of the car and get out of the left door of the car, that's about a good analogy I can use for you, brother.
I think that the surprising thing with Philly is that I didn't think Philly, like New York, like you mentioned, Orlando, and to you understand this, is a tough town to be successful in. The fans are brutal, and I thought Bryce was going to struggle, but I'm very surprised, pleasantly surprised, that he's doing well and embracing the Philly fans and doing well, some walk-off home runs he's doing. He's been pretty solid since they brought him. And yeah.
So New York's not a hard town. Boston's not a hard town. Philly's not a hard town. You got to come correct if you come to these cities. You know, you got to come correct. And people come here, and they don't have the expectation of who the fans are. Danny Green found that out the hard way. That's why they call him Daniel Green. They don't even call him Danny anymore.
Orlando, the only thing I'm saying is that, you know, case in point, Roger Clemens, you know, always got a pass. And even in Boston, I wasn't sold on him. People could say what they want and disagree with me. But the Yankees type of that aura, that type of mentality, even if the fans are a-holes, and they are, especially in New York, not necessarily out New York, you come there with arrogance, maybe to the point of what you're saying, you're going to get shut down. Ben Simmons is a perfect example of it, you know, not taking responsibility, but you can be a jerk but ball out like a Barkley or AI or whatever, not you know, AI maybe not the jerk, but a guy who could have some swag because he was balling out. So what I'm saying is that if you ball out, you could be who you want to be. But if you're not getting it done, and Ben Simmons wasn't getting it done, then he ain't going to last in Philly or any of those markets that I just mentioned. You cannot talk the trash and not walk the trash. If you can't ball, then you need to keep your mouth shut or you need to go somewhere else. I mean,
as someone looking on the outside looking in, I think with the Phillies, sort of the going with Orlando, so I think there's been a lot. I think at one point they did invest in them, but I think now it's more of they're sort of too gun shy to try to go with. And I mean the bullpen doesn't help. The bullpen, I mean their bullpen is you know, if anybody, when Kimbrel was out there, if I'm Dombrowski, I would have went to the White Sox, and if he could be had, like, hey, what do you want? Because I think if you put Kimbrel in there instead of with the White Sox, then I think people will be like, oh, okay, because that's been their biggest Achilles this year. You know, they can hit on the surface, they can hit with like all the good, with all the teams, like the Blue Jays, like the Yankees, like other teams. But their problem, I mean, how many blown saves do they have now, Orlando? It's got to be up to like in the
25.
Oh man,
25.
That's I mean
25.
Yeah. That's
I'm sorry
killer.
Too
We're
though.
Getting the first week of August.
I'm sorry, too, though, not to belabor the point about the Phillies, though, but, yeah, Dombrowski makes these moves, but, T, you know how I feel about their manager. I felt about him when he was there.
Oh, Joe,
I thought
oh,
that
Joe,
he was
– oh, yeah,
I'm
yeah,
not a Joe
yeah.
Girardi guy. I mean,
oh,
really.
No, Joe, you know, Joe leaves a lot to be desired. But with that saying, 25 saves lost. You cut that in half. You cut that in half, they're in first place.
Right. I mean, that's a great point, especially with Atlanta being 500 this year.
You got to remember, at one point, the Mets, Philly, Braves, and Washington were only separated by about five games. It's not like the Mets ran away with the division this year. The biggest lead they had was like about 6-7 games. And
that, it's weird in Philly, and I guess the glass half full is that they're only a half game out, as you said. Even with their struggles, they're still in the midst of having a shot to overtake the Mets. Two quick points before we get out of here, and a brief moment with the NFL as the season started.
Can we just say, you know, just before we get away from baseball, you know, we lost J.R. Richard today.
Oh, man.
71 years old. Yeah, 71 years old. You know, we talk about Gibson being intimidating. You know, we talk about so many guys. But, you know, before that stroke, there was absolutely nobody more intimidating, especially as a lefty, than JR. And, God bless him and his family.
And not only that, T, exciting. I mean, he brought it. And that's what you like when you look at players. You want to look at a guy. I mean, he was overpowering. He was a power pitcher on those. Were they the Colt 45s then?
He came up in the 70s. Matter of fact, he had 15 strikeouts in his very first. He had 15 Ks in his first game. So he's been bringing it from day one. Like I said, and you know, unfortunately, the organization didn't appreciate him, and it, you know, it, sadly, it led to the end of his career because they thought that he was jaking it when the guy was he almost died at the height of his career.
Yeah, 10 years, and it, I mean, it's opposing Randy Johnson type size. I think he was 6'8", 6'9", something like that.
6'8". Yeah. And you know, and look, you know, those, you know, when guys used to beg off, they would have J.R.itis or Richarditis. Like, nah, man, I ain't going up against that.
And really, if he was throwing that power pitch for a decade, he was, you know, a Randy Johnson before Randy Johnson, a power pitcher that was tall and intimidating and could just mow him down. And that was a thing. Of course, a brother that didn't get the due, and of course. He tried to come back. I think it was in the early 80s after he had
he went to camp in 81, but unfortunately the stroke really just took away pretty much anything, and luckily, you know, luckily it didn't kill him. He was 71 when he passed today, so he was able to still live. And actually, I guess at some point, he did mend fences with the organization over the years. But yeah, it's his story to me is always going to be a constant. You know, it sort of falls back on the thing of Simone Biles, because people were talking about he was jaking it. People said that he was jealous that Nolan Ryan made more money than him and that he was pulling himself out of sight. But the guy was, yeah, he was damn near died. Damn near died,
right.
And it was, you know, it was, it's, you know, as much as people talk about the quote unquote stealing signs scandal, I still contend that the JR scandal was probably the biggest scandal in the history of the Astros.
Right, and just a couple of quick points. I mean, the first Astro to strike out 300 batters in a season, and in 78, he had 303, ERA at 271 that year, 13. He led the majors. He 10-4 with a 196 early part of 80. Then he kind of struggled after that, but only 30 at the time he had that comeback. And, you know, young, but rest in peace, him and his family, and blessings to him and his family for his passing on. 71 years young, J.R. Richards. And I do remember that. That's why I had to kind of think, like, man, I remember him and Nolan Ryan. Those old wild colors. Was it the old Astros or not?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 12 or so when he was pitching, just to show my age. Final question, baseball wise, in terms of it's a two-parter. Did baseball get it right in terms of this rule in the beginning that showed, or the enforcement of showing some of these pitchers to not be doing the right thing in terms of doctoring the ball, getting it right? They had some splash with some pitchers getting suspended and fined, and starting the year a little sooner next year, and also with those all the teams playing on the same day, which I think if I'm not mistaken, Tony, is unprecedented.
Well, no, they usually, like the last day of the year, they usually try to make it so that everybody plays at the same time for whatever reason. No, they'll just, you know, the pitchers will just find another way to do it, I think. You know, it's sort of, remember during Giamatti's time when they went crazy about the box and then they sort of backed off on that? Now, they'll, you know, I think this will wind up being the same thing. I mean, you know, they did all that and basically one guy got suspended. And it was, and you know, it's look, make sure you have, you know, they're going to have bigger problems because the CBA comes up, and they got to make up their mind as to whether they're going to keep the DH or not, whether they're going to expand the playoffs or not. You know, people got a little taste of what could be last year, and I think they liked it, but for whatever reason, they backed off. Now, now it's going to be a thing for on the CBA. And don't think that we may not see a work stoppage at the beginning of next year.
Mm. That will be something. And as much as momentum they've had, they certainly don't want to have that, but that is a reality. Orlando, same question. I mean, that you know, starting the season earlier, and you know, it's we'll get to the NFL real quick, but also, you know, trying to, as Tony said, trying to enforce these doctoring of balls by pitchers, and you see a lot of suspensions. Was that something just a splash, or something that you think they'll continue to do?
The pitchers, I think that's a splash. Starting the season earlier, I think that's dumb, but they're going to do it. And I do look forward to seeing the DH in both leagues. That's always been a wasted opportunity, and with so much intra-league play, really doesn't matter. And I think the expansion of the playoff system, Major League Baseball has always been behind just about all the other sports with the exception of hockey. So, yeah, and I'll pay attention to what Tony mentioned with regards to a work stoppage in the CBA. You know, they have such a great commissioner in baseball. I say that
very
sarcastically as I could get it.
Very
out of my
sarcastic.
Mouth. Yeah.
Let me ask you, let's go to the NFL, start with you, Orlando. When you look at the Eagles, you mentioned them way earlier. Jalen Hurts, they've given them a wide receiver, still wide receiver in the draft. They've helped out on the offensive line. They're doing some things, A, to improve, to me, my opinion, to improve the offense, B, to move on from Carson Wentz, and C, to see, hey, Jalen Hurts, this is your team. We didn't bring in a quarterback. You're the guy right now to see what he actually could do with the weapons around him.
I will say Carson Wentz is gone, as he should be. Now we just have to get his twin brother, Ben Simmons, or I think they're the same person, really. That's the joke here in Philly, with the Scooby-Doo mask. Like, who was it? It was really Ben, or was it Carson? Jalen Hurts will have Rager. He'll have Fulgham. He'll have Devontae Smith. You get Lane Johnson back. You get Brooks back. So he'll have the benefit of playing behind a solid offensive line. I told you, I like Sirianni thus far as a coach. We'll see more things. But defensively, they've kind of solidified an area of weakness, linebacker and corner. So you're not going to see this Jim Schwartz, I play 15 yards off the ball against a guy that runs a 3-9. So that'll be interesting. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. I don't think they're going to be anything more than a 9-win team, maybe possibly 10 and 7 will be nice. I think in this division, believe it or not, I don't think the Cowboys will win this division. I think it will be Washington this year.
Wow.
With Fitzmagic. And that defense that Washington has, like, it's all first-round draft picks on that defensive line.
Mm.
So, behind those dudes.
Right, and they just got a linebacker in the draft that's going to help, that could run sideline to sideline. His name escapes me right now. But, T, when you look at it's a couple of teams I want you to look at, the Titans, the Oilers, and this. You know, they bring in Julio Jones, who, like AD, latter part of his career at least, has been hurt a lot. Everybody says, you know, when you got this kid on one side and Jones on the other side, you got this stud in the backfield. with the play-action quarterback, this offense is the sky's the limit. They're going to light it up. But I still have concerns on their defensive side of the ball. Even bringing in, you know, the kid from the Steelers that that can rush the quarterback. And then with the Giants and Jets, the Giants, Joe Judge is laying the gauntlet down, so to speak. They had the big fight, and he's like, you don't like it, don't do it. I'm not sold on this quarterback. And he's going to make or break their season, and he's got a lot of weapons on offense now. And hopefully Saquon comes back healthy. And then you got Zach Wilson with the Jets with a lot of weapons. Unlike Seattle, we didn't have an offensive line. He didn't have an offensive line. He had all the receivers. Zach Wilson comes in with these wide receivers, different coach. Assess those three teams and who you think will be the better of the AFC because they're all in the AFC.
Tannehill's still under center for the Titans, right?
Yeah.
Well, that answers that question right quick. The Jets will be, I guess, out of attrition, probably with a new head coach or whatever. I'm not sold on Wilson. I think, to be honest with you, I think by midseason they're going to be craving for Sam. Not that I'm a Sam Darnold fan, but I just think, you know, he may have one or two more weapons. You know, they'll go as far as their defense. And the biggest thing now is, are they better? Are you know, can they hang with the Buffaloes of the world, with Buffalo and or New England right now? They're still probably on the outside looking in. To be honest with you, I think the team that people might be sleeping on in that division is in Miami. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they got rid of Fitzpatrick. And well, I'm not a fan. I think the fact that they basically said, okay, Tua, it's your, you know, you ain't got to look over your shoulder now. You're the guy. And I think they could be this. I think they're a sleeper in the AFC. Giants will go as far as if they can get 10-12 games with Saquon this year, they may be able to contend for a wild card. But I think you were saying 9-7, 10-6 for the Eagles. Hell, that might be enough to win the division.
How does this adjust or change the landscape in terms of teams, the way they play, the sense of urgency with that extra game and that extra wild card team?
Well, the other factor that I think, again, people are sleeping on is the divide amongst the team, within the teams, of vaccinated guys and not vaccinated guys.
Right.
That's going to be a factor maybe even before they, you know, start the season in earnest. You know, we've already seen a bunch of players that are out with COVID or what have you. Now, I guess it's better to get it early or what have you, but that's going to be an ongoing thing. And when basically the league has basically said, we're not covering your ass this year. If, you know, if you ain't got enough players, you're going to forfeit. So that whole thing, and there are a lot of teams that were divided. Ironically, you know, we sort of half mentioned Darnold, but Darnold early on was one of these, was basically showing his MAGA side very early by saying he wasn't getting vaccinated. And then, ironically, they found out, I guess, the day before camp opened that he wound up getting both vaccinations as well. So, you know, we're still in COVID. I mean, yes, things are a little bit better than they were a year ago at this time, but it may be more of a factor than I think than we think. As we're looking at today, August 5th. Let's see where we're at September 5th.
Yeah, and you know what, Tony, Orlando, I mean, we'll get back to the COVID thing, and that's why I was concerned about the – well, not concerned, was surprised you picked Washington, because they're one of the teams where they have a coach that has those pre-existing conditions, and that's disappointed with the players that not getting tested, and it's been a real concern, not just there, but Baltimore and some of these other teams. But I'll get back to that. But with that being said, when you look at the teams you're picking or other teams are picking, I mean, other people are picking, Orlando, what's the most intriguing team, whether it be based on draft or trade or teams, it could be one in each conference, that you're looking at that may can be impactful based on those things?
I'm watching now. I got to see how the boy genius, Sean McVay, does with the acquisition of his new quarterback.
Right.
I'm curious. You get Deshaun back on a cheap contract, or Deshaun goes home on a cheap contract. I'm looking out for the Rams. I think Tony mentioned the Dolphins as a team that I'll pay attention to. The Evil Empire, just because we'll be flying them around this year. So I want to watch what he does up there as far as his culture. And I'm looking at the Vikings. Like, this is a shut up or put up year for the Vikings.
Well, they still got that same Kirk, what's up, Cousins, as their quarterback. So,
who's under COVID protocol right now as well? Who's under protocol?
Right,
he's under COVID protocol right now.
A fraud.
And to your point, to both your point,
and they have that receiver.
Right, I know, Delvin. I know I'm a Florida State guy. I'm a Florida State guy. I know, but and the COVID, I get it, because actually, Orlando, to Tony's point, both your points, Kirk Cousins is one of those guys that's in denial, and he had it before. So that, but I mean, he's a pick six waiting to happen. I don't know, but your point about the Rams defensively, they're as good as they can get. They got the best defensive lineman and the best corner in the game, right? So then when you look at Stafford, if Stafford's always been a stat guy, can Stafford bring them to the promised land, Orlando? That's the thing.
I don't know, but I am intrigued. I'm intrigued by the Rams. They'll play with some fans. I don't even know if they'll get fans in L.A. But I got to give the boy genius credit thus far. And I think Stafford over that fraud, and now we look back on that draft with Carson and that fraud as the first round pick, first two picks. Oof, that was a yucky draft.
And one other team to you, Orlando, when you look at the Buffalo Bills, again, it's a team that nobody's really that you know, league and players are respecting, but nobody's really talking about Josh Allen and the offense. I still question their pass rush. I know they went defense in the draft, and their running game, but they definitely got the weapons to light up the scoreboard. Do they make the next step? And what about the Ravens?
Buffalo, I think if they were smart, they would stop playing games and they would get Zach Ertz from the Eagles. I think that would push them over the top. The Ravens, I know that's where your beloved team plays in that conference, with the real pervert that never went to jail.
Agreed.
I don't know. Like, your division is about as balanced as can be. We got the Cleveland Brown frauds with the best one of the best fan bases in the NFL.
but I don't know what the Ravens are. I think their window has passed them, honestly. I really think their window has passed them.
So let me ask you, when you look at the Ravens, they arguably has the best secondary in the game. Certainly Lamar, they added on some wide receivers to give him something to make him happy and see if he gets back to MVP caliber. Orlando talked about Cleveland is probably the most balanced team in the league, in the division at least. If that quarterback could do what he did last year, offensive, defensively, they play really well. But what about the Ravens? Is still Kansas City to lose, and what about those Buffalo Bills?
As much as I hate to say it, I'm a little bit more optimistic about Buffalo than I am Baltimore. I hope I'm wrong. They're never going to really get blown out because their defense is, because they still have the defensive pedigree, part of their history. But I just, to be honest with you, I think the AFC is a little top heavy. I don't know if they're going to be able to bust through that glass ceiling, because they still have to prove that they're the best team in that division. And I guess on paper right now it's the Browns, but I'm just not sold on Baker Mayfield. I'm just not. I really am not. I think but see, again, the one solid thing about all the teams in that division, with the exception of Cincinnati, is that they all are fairly decent defensively. They'll go as far as their quarterback. And see, here's the thing, and I know it might be a little premature because he hasn't played a full year, but the wild card in this could be Burrow.
Right. Especially with that, if their offensive line can protect them,
That's the big if, because they're the one team in that division that still defensively leaves a lot to be desired. But offensively, again, when everything, if he's healthy, and there's a lot. I mean, look, this time of the year, it's always about ifs. There's very few absolutes, especially when you realize the league fixed it for Giselle's husband again. So,
Right. And speaking of that, final question to you guys, going to the NFC. I'll stay with you, Tony. What are the ham sandwiches of the Saints doing? A lot of people thought that it was either going to be Jameis or they were going to make a trade. This kid battling for the quarterback position is not a quarterback. That's a whole other conversation. The 49ers need to go with this guy, in my opinion. Talk about them. And then is Tampa, they have a very weak schedule. So talk about the fix was in last year. They got a weak schedule this year, and they got all their weapons back, even the old dude. So what about those three teams? Who do you see the best out of those three?
Well, I'm not impressed with Tampa at all. I'm not even and maybe a lot of that is out of spite, I'll admit. The Saints, look, they've known for the last year that Drew Brees was going to retire. So if the super genius down in the Bayou is still trying to figure it out, then maybe he ain't the genius that everybody makes him out to be. And I forgot, what was the other team you mentioned?
San Fran, what they're doing with their quarterback position with Jimmy G, and then the kid out of the young kid, and of course, you mentioned Tampa.
See you in 2 years, San Fran.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know that there's always a Super Bowl losers jinx, but they took it to the extremes. But it may be for the best for them, so this kid can develop. Jimmy G wasn't the answer, nor was he the question. So they've got a, you know, I think it's going to be a year where they may do, say, a 5-12 or Ooh. something to that. But no, I mean, look, if, you know, if you're going to hand him the Cassie, there's a part of me that would like to see Justin Fields. I mean, I know in my heart Justin Fields is the best quarterback on the Bears roster right now. You know, now if you want to start the season with Andy Dalton, go right ahead. But, you know, I can see, you know, a sort of thing of like what happened with Hurts last year where they're literally and figuratively forced to throw the kid in there. But, you know, we'll see. He's been, to no surprise, he's been very impressive in camp. So we'll see.
Yeah, and real quick to you, Orlando, San Fran, Tampa, and New Orleans.
San Fran, a great city. Love the Fisherman's Wharf. That's all I have to say about San Fran. New Orleans, he couldn't have said it better. The biggest fraud in the NFL, and has been for years, is Sean Payton. And the mere fact that he didn't prepare and doesn't have a quarterback there and doesn't want to give Jameis Winston a shot. So I wish him the best. And, you know, with McBrady and those McFrauds, somehow or another, I think come NFC Championship weekend, we'll be talking about the frauds in the championship game.
Oh, wow.
The NFL definitely wants to see that. So I know they say don't believe in conspiracies, Orlando. And I say don't believe in life then.
Exactly. We got to run, but that's interesting there. Thank you, Orlando Hughes, KRSB Radio, and Tony T. McClain, BASN Newsroom. If you miss any part of the broadcast, go to our website, TheBassNewsRadioNetwork.com. The rebroadcast at TheBassNews.Airtime.Pro. Follow us on Pad Nation at Facebook, Pad Nation Twitter. Of course, Pad Nation 2 at Twitter. And don't forget to check out the website and follow us. Interested in advertising with us, hit us up at labassler40@gmail.com.